get started a little bit. Half a minute early. Go for it.
Good evening, Council, Mayor, staff. I handed out a updated general fund preliminary budget for 2013. Page 2 at the bottom shows a slight planned surplus. Let's see, 9105. And I kind of got there by putting in the 13,050 nonprofits and the other police officers starting in March 1st, and you already voted on a 3% property tax increase. I did pump up by 10 grand the new construction value for property tax. So it kind of balances up. You know, we're about 9 grand ahead preliminarily. That's if you do indeed adopt the 13,050 nonprofit and adopt the budget. Those are two changes to a previous handout, which is on our website, which is entitled Our Preliminary Budget. It covers all the funds. It's still up there. I didn't look today. I'm sure it's still up there, Sam. It's still there. So tonight we have to talk about some revenue decision cards, some expenditure decision cards. The only thing left on that expenditure is the nonprofits and the fourth operator for water sewer. But just in general comments about the budget ordinance that you'll see next time, if in fact that's what you direct us to do for the early December meeting. Some of the construction funds are not in this big, thick packet. What I intend to do, for example, Church Road and Main Street Fund and Police Station, throw in a round figure between 100 or 200 grand expenditures to take us through February. It's kind of hard to know how much we're going to have care of. We're going to have some carryover on certainly Main Street and carryover on Police Station. But just those three construction funds and perhaps the perhaps Thornton Fund 370 will have carryover. So I'm going to put a kind of a round figure in there just to take us through February. Because I really don't, we have to keep our books open through January 20th for 2012. So I really don't have any figures to report till like early February. The other thing that might grab your attention is the sewer fund. Let me just talk about that a little bit. The plan for 2013 on sewer is to, the long-range plan here is to go for $8 million of either loans or bonds to cover about 2 years' worth of capital construction per the sewer comp plan. So I've just laid those figures in for 2013. $8 million revenue and $3.8 million in expenditures, another $4.0 million in expenditures for 2014. They're just kind of placeholders. Obviously, we need your approval to do any kind of long-term financing for sewer. But we'll put those in there as placeholders. And, of course, when we come to that point, we should know, if not late this year, early next year, about some of our Public Works Trust Fund loan applications for sewer, water, and Church Road. So those caveats, perhaps we can go then. Are there any questions at this point on the general fund where with those changes planned, if you approve, we have a small surplus for next year?
Councilperson Metzler?
I just had a question. And I don't want to get off on this because I know it will take more time later on the nonprofits. What was the... staff recommends 13,000. I know that you yourself had recommended just one of those. Who would speak for staff on these items and maybe sort of explain the rationale behind these particular three?
I think it came from the top.
And that's fine. And I respect that. You want to do that now or some other time?
It's the same amount that we funded those units for last year. I think some of you heard my opinion. I don't think you can look at any of those units and decide. side. One is better than the other. I don't think it shows in your report. So it's hard to put that in your print or your report on what organization does something better than the other. So I decided that the service cooperative had come to us last year saying it was a one-time expenditure, so I didn't fund them for this year. You know, obviously they do good things, but they basically come and said this is a one-time deal. When they were here, they said, well, we'd like to add or staff. I chose not to fund that. I said, let's fund it the same as last year. So no increase, same funds as last year.
And there's one other with Paul. What was the other one? There were five altogether. I think you left in three.
Well, it was one that basically...
They're all in, but new additions that were requested for Helpline, as well as the Northwest Youth Services Jobs Program. Those were not in last year's budget, so those were not included as part of this proposal.
So let me phrase it. For the $13,000, can you break it down real quick?
$13,000 includes...
I've got it here.
Oh, go ahead.
It was on the decision card. Teen Court, Northwest Youth Services, $2,250, same as 2012. Ferndale's Food Bank, $3,600, again the same. Domestic Violence Services of Whatcom County, just the basic, $2,700, not the extra stuff they asked for. Finally, Senior Center, $4,500, same as 2012, just four items, $13,050.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
I did have a question. So are we, can the Resource Center never come to us? Because we have this new process where a nonprofit can come and ask the city for funds because one of their board members said it was one time. They only wanted it one time. Should they never, ever come to us again for money? Are they forbidden from applying?
It's up to us.
I would think a one-year hiatus qualifying is coming the next time.
It's an application process, so anyone can apply at any time. The request is then goes through a staff process and the council process. So technically, nothing's happened yet at all.
Okay.
It doesn't. Just the number that's in here is obviously a hypothetical. You know, it all depends on what the council wants to do.
Okay. I thought,
but that's staff recommendation.
Yeah. Because for me, I mean, I told them to apply, and I know John told them to apply as well. And if we'd known that you didn't want them to apply, then I wouldn't have made them go through all that work because that form is a lot of work. That's a lot.
Fair point, but I don't think it's – I wouldn't say that we didn't want them to apply.
Just but you didn't want to give them any money.
Based on what they said last year, we made a recommendation. they literally said they wouldn't come back. So that was the recommendation. I
know.
Listened to the tape.
One of their board members did say that.
Director. It wasn't one of the board members.
Lucy was the director at the time.
It was the director and the chairperson of their board.
So get us back in order, Councilperson Hansen.
Well, that was my point. It was not just a board member. It was, in fact, the director.
Okay.
And Lucy was the director at the time. And after several heavy questions from the council, it was reiterated over and over. This is a one-time deal. They also came, and the other point that I'm going to make is they came to us this year and have already stated that next year is covered. The staffing that we funded for last year is already covered for next year. They made that statement here. I'm kind of in the position right now that I don't have anything against the service cooperative, but why should I have a problem with funding something that's already funded? If they need the money next year, absolutely, come on back, and we'll consider it at that point.
I'll go to Councilperson Watson and then Zimmerman.
I guess then, but we're still going to give $4,500 to the Senior Center. I mean, they have $100,000 on hand as well, but you still want to give them $4,500, correct?
That's staff recommendation.
Okay.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
On the wastewater treatment plant, the vehicle and assistant, you know, it's right down at the bottom, $20,000 and $10,000. Is that a replacement vehicle, or is that a new vehicle, or is it?
It'd be a new one with the fourth operator.
So the
caused by the fourth operator.
So every operator gets a vehicle.
I don't know how many vehicles are assigned. Janice, do you know at the plant?
We have two.
Oh, sorry.
Four.
So this will be a third one?
Two
or
for three, that'll be three for four.
This will be?
Yeah, so there'll be one person still have to share.
Now, do you want to go into? Because Mike was here. Do you want to go into the fourth operator?
Sure. I hand out a new cover sheet on the expenditures, and that's what Councilmember Zimmerman at the bottom there refers to the fourth operator and $80,000 with the start probably a March, February, Marchish kind of start, and then a $20,000 vehicle, and then $10,000 for the basically getting the knowledge into kind of a backup person, an assistant
so
or a deputy person.
I know Public Works has come ready to explain their situation on the fourth operator. It's slightly different than we talked before. Do you want to turn it over to Public Works now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We can come back to to the nonprofits. We'll have time.
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
Good evening, Council.
Good evening.
Yes, Mike, to be here, just in case you, some questions came up where I didn't have the answers. So, Public Works requesting the fourth operator. Since 1993, the staffing levels at the plant have been the same since 1993. So that's 20 years. We have three employees. So that's 1.5 employee for the water treatment plant and 1.5 employees for our wastewater treatment plant. Over that 20 years, we've expanded our sewer system and our water system. The population in Ferndale has gone up. We have more customers, but the staffing levels have remained the same. And then also just environmental regulations are stricter. So there's more testing, more permit requirements. So we're definitely putting quite a workload on our existing staff. And the Public Works Directors have been requesting since 1998 four additional staff. And I know I've been up here. I think this is either my third or fourth time. We have a need at the plant, and so hoping that the Finance Director can help us figure out how to fund that position. And I think he's handed out this table, and I don't know if you want to go over this a little bit, because we've looked at a couple different scenarios on how to fund that position.
Sure. I mean, I can address that. The new handout tonight gave all away. basically, we would use cash reserves from 2012. We're about $100,000 ahead this year on cash for water sewer, mostly rates, mostly revenue. We're a little below on cost. And we'd probably have to look at deferring some of the planned 2013 capital and push that into 2014. And depending on how customer growth goes, we plan for 2% customer growth yearly. If it's more than that, then we'd have to look at in the spring of 2015 for an adjustment to revenue, also called a rate increase, but probably not needed until 2015.
Questions. I lost. I'm going to go. I saw out of corner line. I'm going to go. Councilperson Olson, and then Hansen, and then Watson. Okay.
How much do we currently spend on overtime there? Because we don't have enough people.
Good question.
Yeah. So Mark had Marcy pulled the numbers for me today. So it's an average of like $20,000 to $30,000 per year. So we were looking at with the fourth operator, we could reduce that by 30%. So 10% to 20%, or 10 to 20,000.
Why only that much reduction?
Because the plant, I mean, they deal with emergency situations, with call-outs, working with all of that equipment, monitoring the alarms. And then plus, just by adding the one operator, we're understaffed still. I mean, it's definitely going to help, but we're not going to be fully staffed. So we still anticipate some overtime.
So I think where he's maybe going, and we can help him, is there are times where there still will nobody there at mm-hmm. the plant, the fourth operator, because of the added workload, but there's still times where nobody's at the plant, an emergency happens, and someone has to go there.
Correct.
We've improved it the last couple of years in terms of the laptops and the ability to operate or maybe solve some problems from home, but there are times you're still going to have to drive there, and then that becomes an overtime, regardless of where your hours are.
Right. So we still anticipate some overtime.
And what the other, I think the budget thing here said no new vehicles. Why is there a need for another vehicle?
Because we only have the two vehicles, and with three, we'd have four people. We do have a number of off-site locations. The staff, they have to drive out and check. And then they also respond to the sewer pump station alarms. And so sometimes they might have to go out there on site. So trying to, coordinate you know, the two vehicles with the four people, it just, you know, that's not very, may not be very efficient.
For lack of a better word, we used to call these take-home cars. So are we having people take home cars for this stuff?
I think we only have the one take home.
Yeah, just mine. I live half a mile out of town. And generally when I go on vacation, I leave my truck. So two operators for the other vehicles. More efficient to have. It would be more efficient to have four vehicles. But a lot of times with maintenance, two guys can go out and do the work. So I'm getting pretty okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Clerk has a clarification question.
Mark, regarding the question about the no new vehicles, that was for the general fund, right? And this gift would be out of the water fund.
Correct.
Yeah.
That comment about no new vehicles is really for general fund and or the equipment fund, which you could view as one fund. Excluded the water fund.
Okay, so, Councilperson Olson, are you giving an answer?
Yeah, I got to think about that.
Okay, so I have Councilperson Watson, Goodrich, and then Zimmerman.
Two questions. I'm wondering why we have to designate the assistant as a chief operator, which would cost us $10,000. And I'm also wondering what the ages are of the three people. I'm just curious how close to retirement any of them are.
Yeah, we have one operator that's within 5 to 6 years of retirement.
Okay.
We already have a chief operator.
So what's the line mean then? Assistant, chief operator, 10,000?
The assistant.
Right. So what I'm looking at is there's just added administrative responsibility. So we keep kind of piling on work onto Mike. So I'm looking at like balancing that out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so then with by creating like this assistant position, we can add some responsibility to that position and try to level the workload out just a little bit.
So you're going to give one of the people more work, which
mm-hmm.
is why you
and more responsibility. Yes, more responsibility.
Again, mm-hmm. it's just not administrative, it's also technical knowledge.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, not just admin.
Nope. And just one last thing.
Oh, sure. Sorry.
For the deferred capital projects, have you decided yet what that might be?
Yes, I took a look at that, and we've been planning on doing a crossing with a water main under I-5, mm-hmm. and that's been on in our CIP for a number of years. And so it's a needed project, but we could put that off for another year or two.
Okay. It's not something that's getting ready to break. It would be a terrible thing if we didn't do it.
No, but it is something, though, that the city needs to do, especially as we continue to grow north.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Councilperson Goodrich and then Zimmerman.
Well, that was my question. I mean, what projects would be deferred?
Yeah, and the main one is that the I-5 crossing at Thornton.
Wasn't that a key thing to getting water up to Grandview?
It's a necessary extension.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So we don't need to get the water up to Grandview?
Well,
what's the deal with that?
Yeah, and I think
taking over that water system up there.
Just development up there hasn't really occurred as quickly as we thought it would. And I don't know if Yuri or Greg.
Yeah, we actually have an agreement with the PUD, and it's the triggering mechanism. If you remember, we zoned that area up there for bigger stores. And our agreement with the PUD states that, first of all, they won't expand their system and supply smaller stores. They would only do it if there was a larger store, and that would be the trigger. If we had a big box store or something like that come up in Grandview, that would trigger the process by which we would take over the PUD system. The PUD system up there can handle more growth, but eventually, as that part of the city truly grows, we will need to get the water lines up there. But in the time frame we're talking about, the PUD system is sufficient to handle any near-term growth up there.
Would the new store help pay for the lines? Or?
Yeah, there's a couple of issues with Grandview. One is, as I mentioned, you know, there is the PUD system up there, mm-hmm. but it's a system from the standpoint that when you turn the tap, water comes out. But it's not a system when you look at what would be infrastructure for a regular city water system. It's mm-hmm. The pipes aren't I think large enough. sometimes they're in right of way. Sometimes I think they actually go through people's yards. I mean, it was somewhat cobbled together. It serves its purposes really well. But when and if we take over the water system, there's going to need to be an improvement. But the bigger problem in Granby when it comes to the near-term development of big box stores is sewer. You know, while there's a adequate water system up there, there's no sewer system up there. And we would not allow a big box store to be built up there if they were going to go on a septic system. So that is probably the bigger hurdle for anyone. We've looked at that. We know what it would take to run sewer up there. But yes, a big box store would probably need to pay for the lion's share of that cost.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Mike, cross-drain all your four guys that be cross-drained for water and sewer?
Okay, any more questions of Jens, Councilperson Watson?
I'm just curious if we're going to do with the police officer and waited to do the actual hire until the beginning of the second quarter, would that help you or does it matter? I mean, Mark, how close are we?
The assumption says February. We hire the person in February.
Okay, February.
Which fourth operator?
The fourth operator. Okay. Yeah.
And I think the police is more like March.
Okay.
Ish.
But we wouldn't have to do the water and sewer rate hikes for the people living outside the city that we had right. talked about.
You are correct.
Not required.
I'm gonna pat our public works director on the back here mm-hmm. in the fact that she looked at that and said, Gary, we can adjust our budget mm-hmm. to get this without another direction of the budget. Great job by her. Great job by Mike. We obviously would recognize the need. Great job by public works to be able to figure this out.
Well, council appreciates us, though you don't put us in that position.
Lots of people should appreciate
yeah,
it.
That's very much.
Why we should appreciate your department. Mm-hmm. Councilperson Ingram and then Councilperson Hanson. Councilperson Russell.
If we hire in February of 13, what do you anticipate the lead time is before the new hire is actually contributing to the benefit of the crew? I mean, I've hired people to do things where you had to train them for a year, and it gets kind of sticky. So what do you anticipate, Mike?
It depends on the individual.
If they're not certified, it'll be but you say you're basically behind on maintenance. It wouldn't take them that long to be probably proficient in doing some maintenance work.
No, their background is in maintenance, which is that's what I'm looking for. We can take one of our guys and work with them. There's only 3 days a week that there's actually three people on site, and 2 days a week that we only have one person on site. When you add in holidays and vacation time, that's the amount of work you can get done.
Mm-hmm.
Councilperson Hanson.
Well, as you know, I've been on the council.
Long time.
Eons.
Certainly after the earth cool.
And I've heard this spiel for eons. It has come up many, many, many times. We've got pushing it down the road because I think we really actually believed 5 or 6 or 8 years ago that we really didn't need it. I've been convinced that now is time, and this is sort of an answer to Paul's question. If we don't get out there and get the guy hired, we never will get him trained. We push that training down the road that much further, unless you can find someone out there that's already certified that may be. There may be people out there that have other systems that have to let go. And are good people, but you won't know until you have it authorized to go out and advertise. I will support this.
Just before we go, just for context, I mean, so is it Dennis? He's within retirement within 5 years?
5 to 6, yes.
And Dennis has how many years experience in water treatment?
He makes it another 6 years, about 30.
That's a lot of expertise that we're going to lose.
He really knows
this. This is our brother Amos. He makes it. We need to keep it hanging out.
He knows just why.
Hanging up by the clothing.
All right, back under control here.
We need to get them to town.
Councilor Mushler, Goodrich, and then back to Ingram.
I'm persuaded as well, and I don't presume to speak to council, but I but listen to committees that I attend. I think that's what we need to do. I just want to confirm that the amount we need is 110 a year this year. Is that what the bottom
yep.
line is?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that to me, that's our next challenge. But I'm on board in trying to find a way to do this.
Councilperson Goodrich, Ingram, and then Zimmerman.
My concern is not necessarily for 2013, but for 14, 15, 16, where are we going to come up with that $80,000, 80-plus thousand that keeps going up? You're talking about funding them for next year, but what about the future years? Are we going to delay other projects to pay for this?
Yeah,
or?
You just keep pushing it to the right.
You know, I'd hate to bring somebody on and say, oh, yeah, we got you funded for a year, but in 2014, we're not sure how we're going to pay for you.
We won't let you do that.
Yeah. And what we're looking at is a possible rate increase discussion in spring of 2015. So if Mark's looked over the numbers, we can cover it for the next 2 years, but we'll have to have that rate increase discussion in 2015.
Councilperson Ingram and then Zimmerman. Okay, Councilperson Zimmerman.
Well, I'm supportive of it. I have been for the last few years because I just see, heaven forbid, if there's some sort of catastrophic event and we're shorthanded or, again, heaven forbid that something should happen to one of our three key people, we'd be in a whole world of hurt. And it's a catastrophic failure in that department is super no-no. So bye-bye. Yeah. I support
it. Ingram?
Yeah, Janice, we've kind of touched on this a tiny bit in a couple of other departments at committee level. The gentleman that we've got five, maybe we'll squeeze 6 years out of him as a full-time employee. When he retires, have we investigated at all the possibility of bringing people like him with that much experience under their belt back as a, for the lack of a better term, a consultant basis on occasion? Or a trainer?
It hasn't come.
I'm talking to his wife. She has plans.
I bet she does. Involving Phoenix or what?
His wife is the executive secretary for COG, and her conversation was she has plans for it. Yes, that's what she said. And they're compromises about
mine. I want to check into this, but I think there might also be a limit as to how many hours you can work in our retirement system and still get retirement benefits. I know there's a limit for teachers, how much they can teach after they retire. I'll check to see if that applies to the PERS system as well.
And they just revised that, too, to kill a loophole that people were using to fully retire and then come back and get basically double paid. So it's even more restrictive than it used to be.
I think this is a situation that public works should handle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Okay, any more questions about this issue? Councilperson Mushler?
So, is there a staff recommendation on how to fund this? I'm hearing a couple different things.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, staff recommendation is...
She's going to take it out of her capital for now.
It's cash flow 2012, which is positive, and then sliding some... capital expenditures into 2014. And some of the 2014 is slid into 2015.
Putting off some capital projects down the line.
But they do have some cash on hand.
Mm-hmm.
Also. Yeah.
Okay, I am open to the idea of a surcharge on the outside of the city customers to a certain extent. And if there's council interest in that, I believe that Mr. Peterson provided some documentation that could fund three-quarters of that
process. An increase this year?
Right,
2013?
Yes, sir.
Councilperson Hansen?
Again, having been here long enough, when we make these kinds of decisions...
Microphone? Did you give him a twist here just a little bit?
when we make these kinds of decisions, and it appears to me that we've got a plan for the next 2 years, I don't get too concerned about the funding of it in the third year and on out. Many things happen, typically. You know, it may not even take a rate increase. Instead of a 2 or 3% increase in homes and in additional homes and additional water and sewer usage, you might get 4 or 5%. And we know that our housing has been really healthy. So if this were a one-year thing and we had no idea what we're going to do the second year, I'd say, well, then we need to really consider that. That's, you're 2 years out, that's an eternity in terms of what could happen financially in these aspects. If it goes south, we may be laying people off in all areas. If it's really healthy, we may have the opportunity to do some additional hiring where needed. So I'm not too concerned about those out years.
So Councilperson Mutcher has gone in the direction of exploring an increase for people outside our city limits. Are you directing Mark to bring forward those
He's numbers? Already done that. It was part of discussion, I think, at the last council and committee. If we think it's adequately funded for 2 years, well, that's a potential future funding source. So my understanding is we have about an extra 100 from 12 that we're rolling over, yep. And you're anticipating that same 100 for the next year. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Okay. If that's enough, then...
Plus a delay of capital from 2013 to 2014, 14 to 15, 15 to 16.
I'll make one more comment about... I voted against an increase 2 years ago on the outside customers because I basically put myself in their shoes. I know what my two-month bill is, and I doubled it. I go, that didn't sound like a lot of fun. But I also realized that most of these people are water only. We sort of think of water bills, and that's the whole thing. But the water part's probably a third when all said and done of the whole thing. And so to have a surcharge on these folks it's not fun, but it's not as obscene as it would be if they were taking the whole package from us. So I'm not opposing it now, but I'm open to it in the future.
Councilperson Watson?
I don't think we need it now, though, do we? I mean, no. So we're not really no. talking
That's
about doing
staff
it.
Staff is recommending
okay.
not.
Because yeah. I wouldn't be interested in doing it this year, especially since we've got 2 years of funding. I think we're good to go. I don't want to raise any more.
Councilperson Hansen?
The other thing I would suggest is if we're going to consider that, even if we were going to consider it in the first 3 months of 12 or some date in the future, that it not be the whole enchilada, that it be a gradual, maybe go from 1.5%, which is what it is now, to 1.6% for 1 year, and then 1.7, so that people you slide it in. Maybe they won't notice.
Like cooking a frog.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Bring the heat up.
But I don't think it should come up now.
Yeah.
We've got other things to do here.
Okay. Any more questions? Councilperson Goodrich?
Well, just a thing on that is that if we were adding more people outside our area, then I could see raising. But these people, I mean, it's kind of a stagnant group.
Built out.
Yeah, it's already kind of been built out there and stuff like that. And to say, well, gee, you know, we're going to start raising your fee just because you live outside the area. If we were doing new stuff, I could see maybe the justification to raise it. But just to raise it to raise it, I don't see that that's, you know, a fair thing to do for those people because they're already paying the premium. And we're not building anything new for them.
Councilperson Mutchler?
I understand that. But this is actually servicing these people now, and there is a surcharge to us to have to do that distance. I don't know what it is. I don't know about that.
Certainly all of them, their budgets are all equally as same as everyone else. So it appears to be there's no interest in going that direction for 2013. So any more questions for Public Works?
Need to
okay.
vote on it or anything?
No.
Okay.
I think Steph asked for it.
I'll go ahead and put it in the budget for next meeting. And if you pass it, then you're approving it. There's two other items on the expenditure sheet that we handed out. And one was a minor item of a laptop or some other
device for the building inspector, and it was charged to the computer fund. I don't know if we have anything updated on that, Yori. It's really not a big deal. We already have a capital budget prepared for your approval.
Yeah,
in Catlin's
but
computer.
It came out of our lean direction, so you want to kind of explain what we're going to do with that? I mean, it's a great move.
I thought we agreed
move.
To it already, the hardened laptop.
Yeah, I think we
thing.
Have, but we have the press is here, so you want to explain.
Oh.
I didn't get this.
Sure. The press is here.
The concept behind it is, we touched on it briefly with what we've done it at the plant, being able to use technology to improve our efficiency with some of these, on the ground workers that we have, and one of them is our inspector, where the regulations have gotten more intensive. Our need to record what we do when we go out to the site when we're inspecting, whether it be by putting into a tracking sheet or even taking pictures, responding to emails out on the site, as we probably share more information today, probably 5 times, 10 times more information today than we did 10 years ago, just with technology. And when we have staff who are out in the field for 8 hours a day, who are not in the loop of that information, it turns into a significant deficit. So being able to have as many of our staff people as possible, especially those that aren't in City Hall for the majority of their day, will increase our efficiency. I'm sure that this would pay for itself within the first year.
And this also includes part of the budget where we're going to have an employee from Northwest Technology, and that was kind of our lean meeting, is person from Northwest Technology going with our building inspector and thinking of ways where he can use that more than even what we know. And that's a great step that we'd like to move towards in terms of that new technology. The other side of that is that Brenna, our GIS person, has put so much more into our computers that in terms of Bo Westford and our building inspector is that on that laptop or on that unit, is way more information than we had before, and it's just exciting to see where we're going, and it's making it more efficient, and this employee wants that training. So I'll go to Councilor Ingram and then Watson.
Well, I was just curious. Back a few years ago, before we were fortunate enough to talk Yori into stepping up to the plate here, and we were sold this bill of goods called Black Bear. And I think we spent a considerable amount of money on that. And, that's just out of my curiosity. But that thing kind of went out into the nebulous space age thing. I haven't heard anything.
Quick review on that. I'll turn it back over to our community development director because that is a long, interesting story.
It is. And it really is employees stepping up where we purchased Black Bear, which was, I forget how much it was. We got a grant for it. Soon after, the company, Black Bear, just went belly up. But our employees, Marcy, who works, who takes in permits, taught herself how to use it. And we now use it every day. It has made all of our building permits more streamlined, more efficient. And now we have that data. We now have 3-4 years worth of data since we've been using it. So we have thousands of permits on it that we can now go and look at a particular parcel and see what the permits were. So for a while there, we thought, oh gosh, even with the grant that we were going belly up on it, but we've been able to make it work. And again, I think that it's now paid for itself. It was close there, but lean and employees carried it through.
Councilor Ingram, also I should mention that we use that data. Marcy does a very good job of using that program to give us data that we use to put on our website for public consumption as well, related to our permits. Every single month we put out a report showing all the permits, the valuation, and journalists at the Herald look at it all the time. So it's very valuable.
Well, that's really good to know from my standpoint, because it was one of those things it's been kind of nibbling at the back of my brain the last year or so about did somebody come in and poach Black Bear and just taxidermy into the wall or what?
Discussed upstairs on several occasions.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Councilperson Watson.
So, are we talking about just a standalone laptop, or do you mean an iPad where you could actually get on the internet and get your email?
Well, it would be something where you could get on the internet and get your email, but part of why we would have Northwest Technology ride along is so that we don't give our employee $3,000 worth of hardware where he uses $500 worth. It's to figure out what he needs and what he could need that he might not be aware of. So we have the quote for approximately $3,000 for a laptop, which would get you a good laptop. If we don't need that, then most everything else is less expensive.
But will he have to find a hotspot? I mean, a Wi-Fi hotspot?
No, it would have a card where it would create its own.
Okay.
Doesn't sound like hard, basically.
That,
oh,
yes.
Okay. That's very cool.
That's persistent. Olson?
Were we, I know there was talk about we were going to vote up or down on each one of these $13,000 things. Are we still going to do that?
On the nonprofits?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, do you have one more to present and we'll roll back to nonprofits, Mark, or was that it?
We just have the revenue decision cards, but they're on the agenda tonight. There's three of them. It's a pending board of gas tax, solid waste tax, and utility tax.
Okay, so do you still have the ability to go that where you can vote up and down on each nonprofit proposal? You've seen the staff proposal. You have that list in front of you. And you have it. You can go one by one, or you can add one. You can do it. That discussion is still open.
We
so
can't vote in.
You could vote here to take it into regular session.
You could vote to provide direction to staff. You're not approving anything tonight.
Yeah.
All we're going to do is then add this number into the budget that you'll adopt in December.
From the new council members that were not here when we had a different budget process. We used to have large decision cards, and we do the non-binding, yes, I like that, no, I don't like that. And so this is very similar to that process of thumbs up, thumbs down.
The actual official vote doesn't occur.
Correct.
Vote on the budget.
But we were giving direction staff. That one goes away. This one stays in. That was back in the old days where we'd have at times 20 different decision cards. Those days have come and gone. Councilperson Mutchler, then Zimmerman.
Well, if this is the time to begin that discussion, I just want to say that I appreciate that we're doing it this way. And what has guided my thinking on this is direction from our Constitution, which indicates that that it seems to prefer that activities that help the, what's the wording, the poor and the infirm, is that what it says?
Poor and infirm.
Guide me, and because of that, the two that I'm most favorable of supporting in some measure would be the food bank and the community resource center. I might have considered the senior center if they had presented to us some program or some service they were going to reach out to poor and infirm people. As I read their applications for a staff member, and I'm sure it's going to help those people. So I'm just kind of expressing my views on this, that I could support those two because they most closely fit what I think the Constitution calls us to do.
I'm going to roll your comment on the Constitution to our clerk because we've had discussions about the statement several times. So, Sam, do you want to answer that?
There's been questions. I know that we're not just giving these organizations money. We're not just giving them. I realize that there's kind of a misnomer here because we had them apply for grant funding, but the actual intent of this is that we're actually paying them for a service. So it's not that we're not just giving them funding, which is what that portion of the state constitution says. The constitution talks about literally gifting money, gifting public funds to the poor or the infirm. What we're doing, as many governmental entities do, is pay them for a service, which we will outline in a contract. That the city could potentially do on its own, but we're simply not doing. So that's a little bit of the difference in terms of just from that standpoint. And that's what MRSC also noted to you was that we can't gift it to them. We should do a contract because we're paying for a service. We're not giving them money. So that's one thing that I think in the future we probably should not call this an organizational grant program because we're not just giving them a grant. When you hear grant, you hear free money or taxpayer funding that we use for road projects or something like that from another entity. What we're doing is we're paying them for a service to help support a function. We potentially could have our own food bank as a city. We could have the resource center, but we're not. We're contracting with an outside entity that is largely doing it for far cheaper than we could do it ourselves. So really leveraging our taxpayer dollars for those services.
And Sam, I agree with you completely. And I read all that. And don't just get, I used it as a guideline.
Okay.
So what I think at the end of the day, we've raised property taxes in our citizens and done a number of things. And I have to ask myself, what should we really be doing during this tight time? And I'm just expressing my viewpoint.
Totally fair. I just wanted to clarify because it seemed like the last meeting, you just mentioned it briefly, and it sounded like you were indicating that you felt we were gifting them funds. And so I've been thinking about it a lot in my office.
Well, on the matter of the senior center, I wish there was a more specific thing they were asking us to do besides helping to fund their director, which is what it was. That was troublesome to me with your argument and my argument as well, to be fair.
And that's totally, you know, I'm not trying to convince anyone here to vote anyway on any of these. But, you know, I guess the way I looked at it when I received these applications was that by us helping to pay for that employee, a portion of that employee, they then can use their funding to leverage other aspects of their programming. And that's kind of how I looked at it for each one of these was, okay, if the city's paying any funding to these groups for them to provide us a service, they're going to then be able to use their dollars in another way to either maintain their services or enhance them in some way. So I guess that's just for perspective. But, I mean, I'm not trying to convince any of you to vote anyway. We've made a recommendation, and I think it's up to council now.
Councilperson Hansen and then Watson.
I would point out.
Excuse me. I totally screwed up. You had your hand up before.
Councilperson
Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mark, where is utilities, gas for vehicles, city lights, heating? Where are all the utilities in the budget?
For the city?
For the city.
Kind of rolling back into the nonprofit discussion. We're limited on time.
I have no problem with any of the nonprofits.
Okay, well, I don't think that discussion's over with us. Can you hold that, answer
sure.
that question until later? So Councilperson Hansen and then Watson.
Well, I was going to point out that the auditors have looked at our funding of some of these nonprofits before, and it has been cleared as appropriate.
Yeah.
So what it boils down to us is not our interpretation of what the state constitution may or may not say. It becomes a personal preference. And I guarantee you, and I'll say exactly what I said last year, every time you open the door gets opened further. We opened the door by going to an application process, and every one of them asked for more money. And we have to be careful about that because our primary purpose is not to fund the Senior Citizen Center, the food bank, the teen courts, et cetera. Our primary purpose is police, fire, clean water, and taking care of our wastewater. And there are some other purposes, and these are auxiliary purposes. So I'm going to go with the staff recommendation.
Councilperson Watson?
I guess I'm curious if the finance director still stands by his initial assessment that only the teen court should get money based on how much money the others had. I'm just curious.
Well, the answer is yes, but I believe the senior center provided more data, which I didn't look at, but I still stand by my original.
Don't
in terms of responsive to the details as requested in the grants.
Okay.
Teen Court is the only one that had all that data and tax returns and all that stuff.
Okay.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, I just want to point out one little thing when it comes to the Senior Center. Jerry Warren was the director of the Senior Center for many years, and he was paid by Whatcom County Parks and Recreations. His salary was in excess of $70,000 a year. They removed him from that job and reassigned him due to budget things. But the requirements for the multitude of reporting, data collection, verifications, and all the other paperwork and government-required stuff that goes with the senior center didn't go away. And they now have pretty much a volunteer staff down there that's trying to keep up with all the government paperwork. And I think that if they need a paltry amount to give somebody a little incentive to put in more than 10 hours a week down there to keep them on track and keep the doors open, I think it's more than worth it.
So we'd ask for an up and down or a thumbs up vote. Councilperson Goodrich, we have, you're going to have, and I want to give you a 5-minute break, so you're down there.
My comment's really quick. On the senior center, you know, we're looking at our city budget, and we're only having like $9,000 left over at the end of the, you know, the budget year. Senior center, they have the resources in their budget to their money to, you know, if we didn't fund it, it's not going to close the door to the senior center. You know, they had $100,000, you know, that they have, you know, available to use. I'd rather see a little bit more cushion in our budget. And, you know, wait, you know, and see on that one. The other ones, you know, they're a little more tighter on finances, if I remember right, funding. I'd have an issue with the senior center.
So you have seven, you have a multivariable problem.
Well, okay, you have what staff recommended to you. You know, that's our staff recommendation. Ours was to fund what we did last year with the exclusion of the extra one. We cut the Center for Economic Development because they're kaput anyway. I guess we have 5 minutes. I guess we'll go direction of staff, and let's go up and down on all those. So let's list them each, and let's see if we have an up or down.
You just want him?
Mark, you want to read them off?
First one is Teen Court, Northwest Youth Services, $2,250.
Okay, that moves forward.
That's a good four. Ferndale Food Bank, $3,600. That's a pass.
Okay, that moves forward.
Domestic Violence Services of Whatcom County, the basic, $2,700. I see a four. Senior Center, $4,500, same as last year.
I see four. That moves forward.
Looks like they're all in, majority.
Okay.
Makes it simple.
All right.
What?
We didn't do the...
I know there's one more that some folks would like to vote on.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, Community Service Co-op.
Staff compensation is zero. There was $7,000 in the 2012 budget, which we have paid.
They requested $7,800 for next year.
They did request it?
Yes, they increased an increase of $800 from 2012.
Yeah.
So their request was $7,800.
And I wouldn't support the entire amount, but I would support half that. So I know that's a nuanced response, but that would be my opinion.
$3,600?
Yeah.
Okay, well, so we have one council direct, I guess, up and down for the full amount. Okay, one up and down for half.
That just leaves the revenue decisions, and we have that scheduled tonight with proposed ordinances, the three different taxes.
Okay, I'll give you a little more break. We'll return. We'll start again at 6 o'clock.
Are these revenue decisions we're making tonight, are they in here at all?
They're out. Sort of.
They're out. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we'll forget about the problems.
Really? Then it comes back to them as school. Why they wouldn't just sign it the first time out the door? It's not like anything that could change. That's just typical. They're actually doing their own mitigation.
You've got to look at all of them.
They don't have to do the mitigation.
They can take it.
That'll just take a lot of pressure.
We're ready.
We're there.
We're there. Absolutely there.
You survived.
I'm beginning cash balance.
You think that's going to go up a little bit?
I think
2012 cash might be a little better.
Don't hurt me. We don't want to hurt you.
We have little cheese nippies.
Oh, yeah. So the cheese.
And we're giving discounts for closeness to the water sewer plant. And we're giving disincentives for far away residential next year.
It
kind of makes sense that outside city limits, you got all that pipe, water and sewer plant, all that pipe. Very charged with double on storm.
My computer was built in level 3.
Sometimes I send a file that's like one tab down below, but it's really a bigger file.
So hopefully, soon bring me a new iMac. I can't watch movies.
You just got your iPad.
I do have one. It's not quite as big as a real computer. How do I get like a picture? Trying to email it to myself. Didn't work.
There's not an app for that.
First of the year, you might like to get as many.
Yeah, I need a new computer too. I can't even go on the Windows.
What are you running
out there? But all I have is Word and Excel.
You can come up and help me get my Christmas lights up.
Smart thing,
actually. Oh, yeah, because Gretchen's always getting people clean it off. Unless you don't want to go on the internet at all, what do you do?
That's a big remember that?
Yeah. Greg?
All please rise. In honor of all the work our finance director has been doing lately, he will lead us in the pledge to our flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag. And the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Everyone's here.
Councilmember Watson?
Present.
Councilmember Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Olson?
Here.
Councilmember Ingram?
Here.
Councilmember Musler?
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Here.
All present count for it. Thank you. Councilperson Olson?
With the information that Sam has been working on the Board of Gas Tax thing, I'd like to pull that and schedule it for April so we we can figure out which would be the better time to put it on the ballot, either August or November. And we're still kind of working on that, so I think we're a little premature.
Is that a motion that requires a second?
Well, we've actually opened the meeting. So he's making a motion right now to pull it from the agenda.
Table?
I didn't hear a motion.
No.
Oh, okay.
Table. Move it to a time certain. Right?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
That
so he's making a motion to move it to April, first meeting in April?
I'll second that.
That would be fine. Okay. So before you is to take it off tonight's agenda. It's been moved and seconded to move it to the first meeting in April for discussion.
Correct, because then we'll have more of the stuff that Sam's working on.
Okay. Councilperson Goodrich?
My question is to Sam. When would be the deadline? Then we have to have it decided for an August election, if we so choose to go.
The deadline is, I believe, the first week of May, or sometime in May. I sent council the time on that. It's May, and it's before filing week. So you will not know which jurisdictions will all have primaries.
I remember that.
When we have to submit this.
So does that give us enough time? Does the April, first meeting in April, is that a realistic time frame?
Anything gives you enough time. Yeah, for a general election. It's more of a toss-up for August, but we know it's going to be cheaper than February or April 2013, no matter what.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to move this, so move it off the agenda tonight for discussion in April. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Councilperson Mushley?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment that I with some guests in the audience, that I'm assuming we're going to speak on this. They could still speak on this during the public comment time, but we're not having a. I just want to provide some instruction to them.
That's not on the agenda.
Yes, he's entirely correct.
Just as a courtesy that they've come out.
It's no longer an agenda item, so it would be on the normal public comment.
Thank you. What was the vote?
7-0. Motion carries 7-0, so agenda in first of April. Okay, now we're on to the public comment period. This is the period where anyone from the audience can come address the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. Obviously, you heard you can address what's not on tonight's agenda, or anything else with the exception of the consent agenda. So I see a hand up.
Here.
I knew I saw your hand.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. My name is Victor Bullows. I'm with Starving Sam's, number 4 in Ferndale, and also Heath Oil Company. Again, I've been in front of you once before regarding the gas tax. And again, I'd like to emphasize that we definitely are against the gas tax. Again, you're trying to focus on one industry, stating only this industry is benefiting from the traffic that comes through our city, which is not the case. Yes, we do get some Canadians coming down, stopping our stores, but again, if you stop at McDonald's, Dairy Queen, or any of the other businesses within the city of Ferndale, they're getting the benefits of the traffic coming from our border friends. So again, you're trying to pick one industry to benefit, to increase your infrastructure, benefit the infrastructure. So if you don't find a tax based on the Canadian trade, then I think you should look at all the various businesses that are getting benefit from their traffic. Now, we also have sites in Nooksack and Sumas that are getting the tax, but those are impacted solely by the Canadian traffic, right? Because the population, as you stated in your reports, a lot of the sales in Blaine, Sumas, are driven by Canadian trade. And we understand that. But Ferndale is not the case. And I wonder how many of you actually purchase your fuel in Ferndale rather than go to Costco or Fred Meyer's and get their fuel. So, again, those who are trying to pass this law sometimes probably don't shop in Ferndale. You're going down to Bellingham where it's a little bit cheaper at Costco than Fred Meyer's. So, again, we don't have to eat that tax and hurt our business. So I think you guys should really consider that before you go and putting that in front of the voters.
Councilperson Olson?
A couple years ago, they had a study where they went around and checked all the gas prices by the Attorney General's office. And what they found was the sellers, yourselves, in Whatcom County enjoyed a higher profit margin. And that's all I can direct you to where they find that. You're quoting things about sales in Blaine and Sumas. Do you have some references for that, or is that just your opinion?
That's not my opinion, because I have a site in Everson that I pay the gas tax.
Okay.
And then, again, a lot of that business has to do some impact with the Canadian trade. But I don't see Ferndale being the case, and solely alone driven those tax dollars on that particular industry, where you go into Sumas, where mainly their business is the gas stations, and they are driven by that volume and that tax dollars.
Over here, are you saying that those gas stations up there, the Canadians come across solely to get gas and go back?
Yes, sir.
Really?
Yes, sir.
That's not what I've seen in 18 years in the Border Patrol. Well, having seen those people.
Really? Well, let me tell you something. When I first came here and started working, we had the number one volume station in the world in Blaine. I spend most of my day inside the cooler stocking milk, and they're grabbing their milk, loading their milk, and going across the border. Okay, I'm not saying all Canadians don't come down, but majority of that, we're doing approximately 1 million gallons a month in our location. And they're not just going down the street and coming, they're not coming down. They're coming, getting fuel, and going back.
I will jump in because I want to share an email that I received from the gentleman that owns the station right across from Hagen's. And his, he wanted to comment similarly that he didn't agree with the gas tax. But his comment was he has seen an increase that he directly relates to people coming, using the airport, and gassing up on the way home. And that's something that sometimes Whatcom County, there are people in Whatcom County that assume the large increase in the airport isn't affecting us, where this station in Ferndale basically says the airport expansion has basically helped it. He says his customers say, well, we came down to use the airport, and now we're gassing up before we go back home. So that may be a factor that maybe you have seen that change where they are coming down. Maybe not specifically gas, but they're coming down airport, gas up on the way home. So I don't know.
But how do you feel about that, Attorney General? Are you familiar with this report by the Attorney General's office?
No.
It was on all over the news, TV, about April 2008.
But what does it say exactly?
It's
so we have the higher gas prices?
In Spokane, we found that prices are actually lower now than the state average, McKenna said. Bellingham was the only city among those we looked at where prices couldn't be explained by wholesale and supply cost differences or retail competition. The markup is happening at the retail level. We suspect Bellingham retailers are able to charge more because of the city's proximity to Canada, where prices are even higher.
Well, that should be addressed to the refiners, not us. Our margins are very slim. As a matter of fact, the state of Washington makes more per gallon than any of our retailers do. We pay 3% for credit card fees, it will pay approximately about 54 cents in state taxes. So we're not making the money. The state of Washington makes more money per gallon than we do.
Well, you'd pass on this penny anyway, correct?
We wouldn't pass the penny because right now we haven't compete with Costco and Fred Meyer's. We have to eat most of our profits. Our profits are very slim. I mean, how much you think we make per gallon? So you think
I'm not in the retail business.
Well,
this didn't say refineries. It said suspect Bellingham retail.
So why don't we go this way? Is that would you be open to taking that document, sharing it with our clerk, and our clerk?
I think we have it already, don't we?
Okay.
I got it.
Okay. And then could you, because
sure.
you're debating a document that he doesn't have in front of him, can you get that document to. I'm going to give it to Mr. Bell and to Mr. Bouillos.
Fair enough.
So, sure. Because it's a tough thing to,
yeah, it is.
To debate a document that you don't have in front of you.
Thank you.
We'll have plenty of room. Then you'll have plenty of time to look at it before April.
Thank you.
The discussion
comes back. Okay, I have another hand up in the audience. Welcome. Come forward, sir.
I'm Bob Bell. I have Ferndale Mini Market. I've been there for 35 years, going on 36. I was going to talk a little bit about other parts of it, but I'll address your one your concern that you're talking about. There's a couple of things that that doesn't discuss. Interestingly enough, we have two refineries out here. Unfortunately, we have to get our product out of Anacortes. So our freight costs are greater than freight costs in most parts of the state because we come out of Anacortes up to here. It's one of the reasons we do it. There's another reason that prices are higher in Whatcom County, particularly in areas where, because we're a smaller community. In other words, the city of Spokane or the city of Seattle or Vancouver are large metropolitan areas. Those gas stations generally probably pump about 200,000, 250,000 gallons a month. And so their profit is based on 10 cents a gallon or whatever margin profit they have. The reason that Whatcom County has to have a higher margin is because we do a lot less volume. We do a fraction of the volume that the big city gas stations have. So therefore, the reason that our margins are higher than they would be in Seattle or Spokane or in Vancouver is because we don't do anywhere near the volumes because we don't have the population base.
If we use that reasoning, then counties that are even smaller than us should have higher prices than us. But that wasn't the case.
Well, except you have an unusual situation in Whatcom County in that you do have the Canadian trade. And the investment in a gas station is very, very high. As you know, it's $2 million to put a site in. And then you have all the regulation and so on and so forth. And one of the things you'll find is that because of the Canadian trade, when the Canadian dollar is favorable and their gas prices are high, a lot of the stations in Whatcom County do well. But then you have the drought times when the Canadian dollar is quite a bit lower than the American dollar. Therefore, they aren't coming down to buy the fuel. Well, so now this guy with the gas station has invested all this money in his gas station, but he has no volume. So what happens is he makes his money during the good times of the good Canadian dollar when it's a par with the U.S. dollar, and then he really has to hang on during the times when the Canadians aren't coming down. They do. I owned a station in the city of Blaine for over 20 years, and I can tell you that any time that the Canadian dollar became par with the U.S. dollar, my volumes would double or triple. And during the times it wouldn't, you would starve. Now, you saw in Blaine, and I know this intimately because I was there when the gas tax went into Blaine, at least three stations closed down. And I understand that was also a part of the fact that the Canadian dollar went down at the same time. But this money directly comes out of the pocket of the person that's operating that station. It's not something you can pass on. In the 45 years I've been in the gasoline business, there's two things I learned. One was two things that are price sensitive, and that is milk. And that is gasoline.
But it's not going to be us imposing a tax. So.
I understand. You actually propose the tax, then it goes to the voters of the community. Is that right?
Correct.
That's how that works. Right. Exactly. So the other thing I wanted to point out, and I'll be quick, is that 87% of the money earned in the city of Ferndale is spent outside Ferndale. And all this tax would do is make that number worse. We have to compete with Bellingham. You will find that the Shell stations in Ferndale, as a rule, are generally priced the same as Bellingham are. And yet they have an opportunity to do a little better volume than we do. And so it would be very difficult for us, and it would directly affect the jobs of, I figure, between 10 and 12 people in this city. Your city is blessed with the fact that you have a lot of gas stations in this town. That's the good news. The bad news is it's very competitive. And therefore, each one of us have to really, really work hard at making a profit in our sites. And I'd also just like to note that over the last 5 years, you've been working on Main Street. And any time you have had a construction project going on Main Street, I have operated in the red to be able to not have to lay off employees. And I'd be happy to share my tax return with any one of you if you think that's not true.
Hey, don't leave yet, because I think you have another council person that wants to ask a question.
Sure.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Yeah, Mr. Bulios made a comment about the Visa or the credit card fee of 3%. Mm-hmm. Is that making any difference whether it's a U.S. credit card or a Canadian credit card, or is this just a flat?
No, it's about the same. It's not a flat thing. Different credit cards have different discounts. But to give you an idea, 10 years ago, we as a business would spend maybe $1,000 a month in processing credit cards. Right now, my bill is running over $5,000 a month.
That much of an increase.
Is it because of credit, or is it because of the debit card? Is it debit card treated the same
no,
way?
No, debit cards cost us, but they don't cost us what a credit card does. And but the fees have continued to go up. And I don't need to mention to you what regulation has done to us and what I have to pay for permits for anywhere from the Northwest Air Pollution Authority to the Department of Ecology, so on and so forth. It's incredible what we have to pay. And the reason you're not seeing new service station sites being built, it's real simple. They're just it's a very regulated business. It's very hard to make money. I'm successful only in the fact that I've been there for 35 years and I don't have those costs. Obviously, I have my site paid for that type of a thing, so I'm in a lot better shape than most. But if you think that we're getting fat on the hog, being in the gasoline business,
do most people pay by credit?
I'm running about 65%.
Okay. So I wondered too if paying at the pump means people don't go in the store and grab the hot dogs, so they pay just for the credit card.
Well,
so you lose that in-store impulse.
Yeah, that has affected us, absolutely. I mean, my volume today versus what it was 10 years ago, both in gasoline and in the store, is less than it was 10 years ago. I mean, we're fighting for that business. And, yes, people are in a hurry, that credit card, absolutely. And that's why we pay for electronics. We're just going to put $25,000 into a new electronic system. And what's it going to be able to do? It's going to be able to allow us to have discounts that people, when they buy from Fred Meyer or they buy from all these stores, we're investing in that. In that industry, if you will, and we got to spend $25,000 to be able to do it just electronically, so they can come to our pumps and when they pay cash, for example, right now we have to figure out the discount. We want to be able to, when they come and pay cash, it automatically gives them their discount. And so that's, anyway.
So, Mr. Bell, the big question of the night that the citizens of Ferndale need to know is, what are you going to replace Twinkies with?
That is a very good question. In fact, I had that conversation with Gina. And by the way, I had the best Twinkie day that we've had last Saturday.
That seems to be
correct. Yeah, it was. In fact, the shelves were bare this morning.
Yeah, I noticed that when I went in there.
It's a serious question. People want to know.
They're stocking up, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they last forever.
So. That's right. Well, I hear that Sarah Lee is bidding for them, so maybe it'll be Sarah Lee.
We hope so. Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, I know you're here for me a lot. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Anyone else from the audience?
3%.
So that's his group.
Welcome.
My name is Patrick McAvoy. I represent McAvoy Oil Company on Iron Gate Street in Bellingham. And I just have a couple things to add real quickly. I won't take much time, but I just wanted to make sure that it was understood that Shell, of course, wouldn't suffer by this one penny tax. Their prices will be what they are. McAvoy Oil Company's prices delivering to the Shell sites in Ferndale will remain the same. It will be the retailers here in town, which, of course, Bob and Victor have expressed. So I just remember that when you are voting on the tax, you are asking 8 to 12 people to pay a check each month. Basically, it's a tax on 8 to 12 people, in my opinion. And I think that's fairly unfair, and there's probably better 8 to 12 people you can find than these guys. The last thing I'll mention is that although it does seem just like a penny, and it doesn't seem like a penny's a whole lot, it's a couple hundred to a couple thousand bucks a month per site. And I think if you asked any small business owner if they could just raise their prices and then cut you a check for the difference, I think you'd get probably the same reaction from any of them. I think it would be a difficult proposal. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, any more comments from the audience? Hi, Sam. Okay, we'll move on. Council, I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, next up is the first of two public hearings. The first one is the Downtown and Small Business Development Incentives. Welcome to our Community Development Director.
Good evening, Council. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. So the first subject, the downtown fee incentives, has two elements to it. Council can, at their option, vote on that one ordinance, which would adopt both together, or if Council wishes, it could modify it as you wish. As you will recall, several months ago, actually a couple of years ago, we started to discuss ways that the city could help to influence downtown development, where you as citizens of Ferndale, as well as property owners downtown, as well as a number of other people who live in Ferndale, have observed that not a bunch of new development, new buildings, have gone up and downtown, whereas in much of the rest of the city, we've had fairly sustained building growth. So a couple months ago, council asked staff to bring back possible incentives that the city could use to help to accelerate or make development downtown more affordable. And as we last indicated to you, Washington State does not provide a lot of tools that we as a small city can utilize. Some of the most substantial tools that are utilized by other jurisdictions, a great example is a business and occupations tax, where what many cities do is they just waive that tax for certain development. Since the city of Ferndale doesn't have a B&O tax, there's not that tool to waive. But that is a significant advantage to coming to downtown. What we have identified and what's in front of you tonight is possibly the first of many, possibly the only ones that we'll be able to come up with incentives that could help downtown. And I'll explain them both to you, and then I can answer questions about each separately. The first of them isn't just downtown, but what it would be is a rebate of up to 50% for development applications on commercial or industrial projects that will employ less than 20 people. That would apply citywide. The discount, the 50% discount, would be applied as a rebate. So it would be paid for, and then upon the demonstration that, in fact, there are less than 20 employees, it would be rebated back to them. Now, both of these proposals affect the administrative fees. The administrative fees are defined in the ordinance, and they include the building permit fee, plan check fee, site plan review, technical review committee, and so on and so forth. You can see that on page 40. Together, and this applies to both of them, a full discount of the fees can vary from tens of dollars to thousands of dollars to, in large developments, possibly tens of thousands of dollars. It's half as much for a 50% rebate compared to the next one, which could be 100%. For the first one, the thought is that a business that employs less than 20 people, could be 15 people, could be 25 people, that's up to councils to decide. Those businesses are more often than not the businesses that are on the edge in a tough economy, whereas a larger business, according to this philosophy, would be better able to rough it in hard times. So these are the ones that might be more locally grown, where we've heard the mom and pops are having a more difficult time. That's proposal number one. The second proposal applies only to downtown, and it would take those same fees. And in the downtown core, which in the proposal includes both the city center zone, which is basically both sides of Main Street, from Vista South and from Alder North, that's the city center zone. It would also include the urban residential zone as proposed, which is more or less a downtown core from Washington South and over to Sterling right now. It would waive 100% of those same fees for development on vacant properties in that core area or properties that have current nonconforming uses. So I'll talk to those a little bit about, first starting with the nonconforming uses. Those council members that have been on council since 2008, 2009, and possibly even before then, we had some discussions about the single-family residences downtown, and whether or not the city, through its nonconforming ordinance, wants to force those uses out. The standpoint from council at that time was no, we did not want to force those out by preventing preventative maintenance on them. But what we've heard and what we've seen is that the existence of single-family residences, especially along Main Street, creates a perspective of downtown that it is holding on to days past, whereas the removal of those single-family residences might pave the way for downtown to be reborn, so to speak, and that them continuing to exist is an impediment to potential future growth because there simply isn't a lot of land downtown. In addition to that, there are the vacant spaces, and there aren't too many vacant spaces in the city center zone. There are in the urban residential zone. That those vacant spaces are prime development opportunities, and that the existence of vacant spaces could show that there's potential, but it could also show that there's stagnation, that there are spaces that have stayed vacant for a lifetime. So the goal with this second proposal would be to incentivize the development of those parcels that have had a really tough time or a tougher time to develop and that have not developed to a realistic full potential. Unlike the first one, the 100% reduction would simply mean that the fees would not be paid. There would be no rebate. That's primarily because it's pretty easy to see if something's vacant or nonconforming. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have about this. Keep in mind that this doesn't affect the traffic, which comes next.
Questions for staff? Remember, this is a public hearing, so we have to hear from the public for you, so don't make a motion to approve, but ask questions. Councilperson Mutchler's first, then I'll go Goodrich, then Watson.
I had a couple questions. How would this work out if a larger development came in that was like a strip mall that would have several tenants? So one person's building the whole thing, and then he's going to rent out or sell whatever. So that was one of the questions that I had. The other question is, how would a developer know about these discounts? Would they not find out? We're trying to get to spark some interest. This may be something they'd find out after they come in with a plan. Oh, I'm going to save a few thousand dollars. So I'm curious about this. We're trying to incentivize this. How's that actually going to work in the real world?
Well, to answer your first question, if a strip mall was proposed, unless they could demonstrate that project together, all the different individual spaces in it, would generate less than 20 new employees, I don't believe that would count in the rebate program.
Even if each business was 5, 10?
Because it's based on the project.
Okay, thank you.
Council could amend that, but that is as proposed. The second one, as far as public outreach, as council knows, this is always a bear to deal with where staff and council feel that we've put stuff at the counter, put stuff on the website, and then we hear that people don't know about a rebate or a deferral program until after the fact. And I don't have a really great answer just because I don't know how to contact each and every person. I do know that the city clerk and the community development department work really hard to put that information online. Unfortunately, I don't want to sound boastful in any way, but council has done a number of things to incentivize development, and once you have more than a few things, it turns into a laundry list where like we talk about signs, sometimes if you have a whole bunch of signs, you don't see any one sign. If we have a lot of incentive programs, thank goodness, but you can't see any individual one. But we've been working on creating an incentive page that you can go to so people can see just how many benefits there are to come into Ferndale.
Councilperson Goodrich?
John took one of mine away. So the other question I have is in regards to building north of Main Street and building south of Main Street. South, you're in the floodplain, so the development costs are going to be a lot higher in that area versus north of Main Street, where you don't have to worry about floodplain issues. In the incentive, is there any way we can differentiate between that and make it even a little bit more attractive for somebody to develop on the south side, even knowing that they're going to have additional costs, or is that...
It's kind of like that business and operations tax where you apply the tax and then as an incentive takeaway for some. If we're talking about 100% discount in the administrative fees, I guess in theory we could say north of Main Street it's only a 50% discount and south it's 100%. But in this calculation, there isn't much. And we tried to think of how we could possibly further incentivize or take into account the fact that there are those flood issues. And there it gets where it's crossing maybe a philosophical line where here the city is not paying development to develop, but I don't know that there's much where we can create a nexus between development and costs where it wouldn't be the city actually subsidizing development.
Councilperson Watson and Ingram?
I'm just curious, since you're going to basically be doing all the work but you won't be getting the money, how much can your department eat in these costs? Suppose it was popular. A lot of people came up and suddenly you got $50,000 less in costs over a year.
Well, it is new revenue. Okay. Where I think the argument, and probably folks behind me will make the argument louder than I will, that if only the city would allow development to come in, then through the general fund, we would get more profits from it than we would ever get through these administrative fees.
You mean sales tax?
Through sales tax, property tax, just it being there, mm-hmm. people then living. That's probably an anecdotal argument as much as anything else. To the direct answer, if I believe that our department's salaries have been paid for or are being paid for by development that is already occurring throughout the city, and they only work 40 hours a week. So if new development comes in, we're not going to work more than 40 hours a week. We're already there and our salaries are paid for. And if council feels that this is a public benefit for the city to incentivize downtown, then if development outside of the core area was not able to sustain our salaries, then it would be my hope, and I'm sure my staff's hope, that the council next year at a budget would find revenue from the general fund to supplement any revenue that was quote-unquote lost.
Let's take you away from that, though, because it goes into what we discussed before, and I think it's important that the public and the press hears that administrative fees can be reduced mm-hmm. if a project is presented properly. And so
absolutely.
I want you to go on that because I want the public to hear from you.
Absolutely.
I
want him to go on that subject because
okay.
it's an important one to the people that manage his time mm-hmm. that he presents, that the press and the public knows developers aren't getting a free ride. They still have a giant amount of responsibility in how they present the project.
And then I have one more follow-on.
When an application comes in, if an application is complete, if it's done by professionals, if it responds to the questions that are on our application materials and our checklists, it becomes quite a bit easier for professional staff to go through it, to determine if there are issues that need to be addressed, and then ultimately to approve it. If, however, an applicant comes in and wants to play catch me if you can with staff, it takes an order of magnitude more staff effort to try to pin them down, to try to make sure that the information is correct, to not bicker with the applicant or maybe the applicant's consultants. So what this is asking, what we've taken steps to do in other cases as well, is if you put garbage in, you're going to get garbage out. And what it's going to ultimately do is it's going to remove our ability to even consider programs such as these. That if we get good applications, complete applications in, only then can we even consider creating incentives. So to applicants, I would say, don't try to play a game with staff. Staff doesn't want to play a game with you. We want to get you to approval.
Okay, Councilperson Lachey, we had a second issue, and then we'll go to Councilperson Ingram.
I guess my only concern is I want us to be prepared that we'll have to eat the cost. We see a lot of small businesses come, and 6 months later, they're just gone. And so I wouldn't want us to think that just because we gave them a $10,000 break that they're going to be here for the next 10 years. I'm not opposed to doing this. I just want to make sure we're not expecting.
Well, and part of this, you know, where we went on this direction was direction from council, but part of it was from some developers who said, you know, if I come to you with a great project that you don't have to do much administrative, there should be a benefit for me. That's like,
yeah, you're kind of right. And so it's a two-way street, is that we want to get out there that if you come to us with a project that you have done correctly, and we don't have to redesign your project, we don't have to argue with you, then your and his staff's time should reflect a 50% drop, because it, you know, it's designed on that doesn't go by. So we think at the end of this, it's not going to be a budget hit. It's going to be revenue neutral. We hope so. So
revenue neutral. Where have I heard that?
Well, we hope so. Councilperson Ingram and Zimmerman.
Well, just to follow up on Councilman Goodrich's comment about north versus south of Main Street development, we can't discount more than 100%, obviously. We're not going to pay them. But the incentive to develop south of Main Street comes in the cost of the land. It's a lot cheaper south of Main Street than it is north of Main Street. So there's your incentive to develop south of Main Street. It's not what we're doing. It's what the real estate market is charging for the ground.
Okay, now roll back to non-debate questions of staff on this proposal. So non-debate on the issue because we haven't opened the public hearing. Questions of staff. I'll go to Councilor Zimmerman, and then I'll go to a finance director.
It's just a point of information, Kathy. Primarily who we're going after is the developers. Most of the time a small business doesn't buy the real estate and develop the building to open a business. If they do it, they're a pretty big one. Even people like Hagen's have a separate arm, so they're a different entity. So you're looking at basically the builders, the people that want to own the real estate and be landlords. Those are the people that we're going to be dealing with. And that building's going to be there for a long time. Businesses, as you know, they come and go. So it's two different birds.
Well, I think that's where John's question comes in, though, because if you build another strip mall, I mean, you're probably going to have more than 20 employees in that strip mall at any given time.
Well, yeah, and this is the two things I like about this is the number of people, the jobs you're creating.
We're debating, aren't we?
And the other one is there's a sunset of this.
Well,
this
you're opening up to, you may want to add an amendment to it. Yeah. I mean, there's certainly some, when you get in a debate, you may want to add an amendment. So I'm going to move to our
finance.
And the other thing is that there's a sunset clause of December 31st of 2014. So this is a short-term little experiment to see if we can help some small businesses, developers improve our core.
Good point. Very good.
Just briefly, I heard a comment that maybe you already clarified. Are all of these or some of these the pay up front, the full, and then they get the rebate later if they're in business in a year?
The small business would be in the form of a reimbursement program, not an initial waiver of fees. So the fees would need to be paid up front, and then we would be able to determine based on their pro forma or something similar how many employees are anticipated. The downtown waiver is simply, yep, that's a vacant piece of property. You will not need to pay fees. Thank you.
Okay, any more questions for staff, Councilor Zimmerman?
Well, is this, you got option A, option B. Can you have option C, which is both of them, which is outside the core, yet the inside the core, there are special benefits too?
That's not what's being proposed. Obviously, in a downtown core, you get 100% if you're vacant. Bandit, there you go. Outside the core, we didn't propose it to be anything more than 50%.
I'm saying, does one preclude the other? Or can you have both of them?
If you were downtown and only had 18 employees, but it was an existing developed parcel, it would be 50%. If you're downtown on a vacant piece and you had 1,000 employees, it would be 100%. So, it wouldn't effectively be a good effective way to parse it out.
Council can approve both of these. These are
There is an option C, which is everything above.
Yes. It wouldn't change what you get.
That's what staff is recommending.
They are recommending.
Okay, any more questions?
Thank you,
staff. Okay, seeing none, I'll open up the public hearing. I'm going to read, I have no one signed up for the public hearing, but you can still speak. I'm going to read the formal speech on public hearings that we all legally have to do that council is so excited about, and it's going to apply to both of our public hearings
so I can save you all the pleasure of reading it twice. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it's necessary to sign up the sheet located at the counter in front here. No one has signed up since then, but if you want to raise your hand, we'll still allow you to speak. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's roster on the microphone. Clear, state your name and address. If you're speaking as a representative for another person or organization, so state. State whether you're opponent or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes after all the comments are heard. If you have something to add that has not already been added at the discretion of the mayor, you may be given an additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council staff and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. At the last word spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter into regular session. The subject of the hearing will usually appear on the agenda item for council discussion, decision, or referral. The audience may not comment during the council's deliberations unless questioned by the council for clarification. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing to give every person an opportunity to be heard and ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising their right to free speech. So at 6:42:03, I will open up the public hearing. Would anyone like to come forward and speak on this issue? So not all jump and be excited all at once. Okay. At
six, there's a hand.
I see a hand. Ah!
Very excited. This hand.
Great. Come forward, sir. Thank you for raising your hand.
You're welcome. I'm very passionate, I guess, about downtown Ferndale, and I think the reason I am is because
I guess for the official record, can you state your name?
I'm Bob Bell.
Thank you.
I'm a property owner downtown Ferndale. I'm very passionate about this community because I've been here a long, long time. And one of the things that I've been really involved in through my 35 years here has been downtown. And I've been on Ferndale Image Group. I've been on Main Street Program. I'm currently on the board of Downtown Association, and I also have owned a fair amount of property downtown, and I've recently purchased in the last 5 years. And my incentive for doing that initially was, of course, I built the mini market there. 35 years ago, we put in Alder Street, we put in 4th Avenue, and we developed where your City Hall is now and where we are in the bank and Darby O'Neill's office and then the old Langevier Toll office was all developed back 35 years ago, and that was basically the last major development downtown, except for the building that was developed by your ex-mayor, and then also I think there's been along the riverfront there, there's been some small development that's gone on there. And through all those years, I've been through a lot, everything from, you know, having buildings that are the Western theme to turn of the century and so on and so forth. But one of the things that's been pretty common throughout all of this is the cost of doing business downtown, the cost of developing downtown. I recently purchased, or 5 years ago, our five-year lease is now up with the Interfaith community, and one of the reasons it was built there, or that it's there, is because Phil Petrusik came to me and says, we need Interfaith downtown. We need a medical facility downtown. Lamar McKay and myself, we went out, we found the building, we purchased the building. It was a derelict building. Had serious problems. We had to raise the building up. We had to put pilings into the building and so on and so forth. A questionable investment. But anyway, we went ahead and did it. We got that development done and so on and so forth. And one of the things that's a killer to us right now is the fact that I just had to write a check for $6,800 for flood insurance. That's a cost of doing business downtown. And so any new building that goes in that's in that floodplain, unless they go through a special process and make a special work with FEMA, after you build your building, you might not have to have flood insurance. Now, this is if you're going for financing. The bank's required. In other words, it's a requirement of the bank. The bank has to, you have to put flood insurance on the property if you're doing any bank financing. So what has happened, and of course, this doesn't even address the issue of the fact that you have to raise the building up somewhere between 2 and 6, 8 feet, when you're building down there. Well, the cost of doing that obviously exaggerates your cost, if you will. And I think that's what any developer is facing, is the cost of bringing it up to that point, and, of course, then the flood insurance. So I think the other part of it is the fact that there has been no development, but there's been very little revenue off that vacant land. So, in other words, my taxes on that vacant land is very low. I build a building on that land, and now all of a sudden I'm paying property taxes on that building, which the city gets a portion of. I also, if there's any kind of a business that goes in there, obviously there's sales tax. And obviously, if it's apartments or whatever, it's people that come there, they obviously will buy and purchase things in the community and so on and so forth. And one of the things we're trying to do with downtown is create a walking environment so people can shop downtown and so on and so forth. And a recent restaurant tried to come in, and I think Gary's very familiar with this, and they said there's not enough rooftops. In other words, there's not enough people here. I couldn't afford to put a restaurant, and there's no other restaurants here, so it would be foolish for us to invest the money in the restaurant. You've got to start somewhere. And this incentive, and some people have misunderstood my position on this. I don't disagree with impact fees and administrative fees and all of that. I don't disagree with that. But what I say is you have to incentivize it up front because it's the only way you're going to get it. Once it gets started, you will be able to bring those back in again because then your property values will come up, the rents will come up, so therefore the developer can afford to pay more. Why? Because he has more revenue. But right now my office building that has been vacant for a year and a half, I just had to lease it out on 50 cents on the dollar. And it's the issue. It's all about dollars. If a project doesn't pencil, if it doesn't create the profit it's supposed to create, the banks won't loan you the money. The developer won't come in and develop, and that's exactly what's happening to downtown.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Bell? Councilperson Olson, and then Goodrich.
So with this before us, what would this do for you?
What that would do for us, there's a number that you have to come in at to make it work. In other words, you need to be somewhere between a 6 and an 8%, 9% return on your investment as a person going in and doing the development. Not only does the developer say that I need that to be able to risk that money in that development, but the bank says unless you get that, we won't loan you the money. And so therefore, what this would do, this would help get the cost down on a project to a point. And I'm talking about both your proposals, by the way. I mean, I understand you have another public hearing, and I won't bore you twice. I'll let this speak for both of them. That by doing that, you bring it to a point where it becomes cost effective. And once it becomes cost effective, then the project will go forward, and the projects will happen.
So this you're saying would be the kicker to break it open and
build. I think this, along with the impact fee issue, I think there's two issues. I don't think there's just the administrative fees. There's not enough money there to make the difference. Now, I've also spent the money. I've spent probably, in the last 5 years, I've probably spent $15,000 to $20,000 on projects to go on that piece of property, on one particular piece of property that I'm trying to develop on right now. The first project, it just absolutely would not pencil. What we were going to do is put up a three-story condo, retail bottom condo, top two floors. And I had one of the better architects in Bellingham design it for us. We then went to the account, sat down, and put together the numbers. And once we had done that, and of course you have to spend money to get to that point. And so to get to that point, we got to that point, and of course the numbers just wouldn't work. So we had no bank to talk to unless we financed 100%, and I'm just not there. That's kind of what I'm talking about, you know, is that you have to get the number there. So the same thing with the impact fees, that you have to get to a number where the return on investment is there for the developer to have the desire and for the bank to have the desire.
Councilperson Goodrich?
My question deals with the rebate aspect of it. Does it make a difference to the bank to say, the fee is $50,000 versus $100,000, but you get $50,000 back? Do they look at it any? Is there an advantage one way or another when you're?
Well, I think you have to protect yourself. So in other words, when Yori was talking about the guy that comes in that doesn't have a plan, doesn't have anything, and starts wanting to do a project, that's why you want to have payment in advance and then get rebated back. I get that. I mean, that certainly makes sense. On the other part of it, the one for downtown, of course, that's 100%, and of course it's vacant, so it's kind of a different ball game. So. So anytime upfront money, I mean, obviously there's no money coming to the developer until there's a tenant in that building, whether it be a condo or it be a apartment or it be a retail establishment. So that's always the difficult part for the developer, is that upfront cost, the money upfront. So I think on one hand, I think the city has to protect themselves. I don't disagree with that at all. On the other hand, what can you do to help the developer come in and make it efficient enough for him so he doesn't have those upfront costs? Because if you have upfront costs, those add to his costs, because chances are that's borrowed money.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh.
Bob, thank you for 35 years of patience.
Oh.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Anyone else from the audience? Welcome, sir.
I'm Sam Bordas, and I live in Ferndale, and I own several pieces of property in Ferndale, several downtown. I believe the proposition gives us a tool to or an incentive to go out there and get more tenants. I've developed several pieces of property where my office is, and I had to create, you know, come up with more money and incentives to keep Cargill here or bring GSA in here or bring people out of Billingham back here. And if we want to bring in more businesses to Ferndale, all of that just give us an incentive to pass on to our tenants, even for a short term, to bring them here. And once they're here, they're not going to leave. We're going to keep them happy. So I'm all for it.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Bullios? No? Thank you. Thank you for your time. Anyone else from the audience? One more. Welcome, sir.
You guys are probably getting tired of seeing me up here. But
no, not yet.
I'm Scott with Hilco Contracting, and as you know, I own the piece down there on Cherry Street, and hearing this incentive is definitely, I'm for it, of course, because I have to go to, there's not a whole lot more I can say, actually, more than this gentleman over here said. That was very well said. But it is tough when you go into a market and investors and banks, they don't really like to even talk about impact fees, incentives, administration, all that stuff, even though it's a reality, everything costs. They look at that as, you know, just that's not making them any money. That's money that they would like to avoid because there's nothing they can get back out of that, you know. So anything they can do to help anything you guys can do to help the developers to get those upfront costs, because my project is going to bring 100 to 120 doors. That's in the upwards of 200 people to downtown. And it's unfortunate for me to hear that a restaurant owner came in here, couldn't get his demographics to pencil, and I'm kind of wondering if anyone has his phone number, does he even know my project's around, because maybe that would change his mind. You know, 200 people downtown is a lot of people. It's a lot of ped traffic. That's gonna be a big boost for business. It just can't. People just, they...
Well, you are, and I mean, it was 2 years ago now, but what he looked at is he did a study and said, you know, there are not enough people living downtown, walking downtown, that might wander in my restaurant. He had a whole performer that showed, you know, this number of people living there are going to eat this many times a month, and he goes, you don't have enough people living within walking distance yet for me yet. You may
right.
someday, but to put a higher dollar restaurant, I'm only going to get those people, they're going to eat in my establishment one or two times a month, and you don't have enough people for me to pencil that. You need, his answer back to me was, I will continue to look at Ferndale, but you need more people living downtown. So you were exactly correct.
Right, right.
I still have his phone.
Yeah, and good, we'll talk. And the people who want to go to those restaurants, by the time they get in their car, as we've talked about in other meetings, they're driving right through and going to Bellingham. So I'm for it. I thought it was very well written, the fact of putting it on the responsibility of a person like me to bring a complete package. And that's exactly the way I run my business. I mean, to have to try and play the bait and switch and the catch me if you can thing does nothing but cost everybody a bunch of money and frustration. And quite frankly, in my opinion, they shouldn't be building anyway. But they're out there. Anyway.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else from the audience? Okay, seeing none, just I'm going to close the public hearing at 6:55. Councilperson Mutchler.
First of all, I'm extremely appreciative, Yori, that you busted your hump to come up with something. I mean, we were just begging, come up and give us something. And you pulled a rabbit out of a hat or something else. But I enthusiastically want to support both parts of Agenda Bill 12-11-006 and make a motion in the affirmative to do that.
I'll second that.
Okay, been moved and second. Further discussion? Councilperson Watson?
I am curious, just for a discussion point, do we want to change the 20 people? Because if you had a strip mall, you're easily going to go over 20 people in the aggregate. But I don't know, I mean, community planner, can you help me with the wording? Is there a way to do this in a clean way?
Are you saying you would like that strip mall to have this incentive?
I would.
Okay. Yeah. I was not sure.
Yeah, no, but like if someone wanted to build a strip mall, but they're going to, if you added up all the employees, it would be 35. I still think that would be a nice addition for the town, but...
35? Yeah, that would be the cleanest way to do it.
Just pick a number, but I'm picking a number from you know where, so...
I think you've opened up discussion, so I have Councilor Ingram and then Goodrich.
Well, my suggestion to that, because I totally get what you're coming from, could we not say, and I hate the word strip mall with a screaming passion, can we call it something else? If we have another Ferndale station come in, or something similar to it.
Commercial buildings with multiple tenants.
With multiple tenants. Could they not get the same incentives because it's multiple tenants? I think the multiple tenants is the...
You simply could just increase the employees.
Well, the other
thing, the multiple tenants is kind of the kicker to me, because if it's a multiple tenant development, the odds on any one given in tenant having more than 20 employees is pretty nil. I mean, look at Woods Coffee. I mean, they've got...
The other thing...
You just pulled the number 15. Of that. Yeah. You just basically pulled right out of it.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that you could do is you could say no business within a project may have more than X number. That way, you have multiple businesses. None of them could have... Oh, that might be...
Okay.
That phrase, yeah. That phrase, yeah.
It has to be small business for the state law to allow this to happen.
How would you know what's going in?
They would need to demonstrate. If they could not demonstrate to our satisfaction, then we would need to say, no, I'm sorry, you're not
I think that the square footage of each individual's business footprint is going to dictate pretty much how many employees you got. If you've got a tanning salon, I mean, it's got 1,000 square feet, how many people are you going to squeeze in there? So unless you've got 200 employees all are putting in a half.
I think your solution is there. I think it's a simple solution. I think you're in the right direction. Councilperson Goodrich and then Mutchler.
Well, I was looking at it as a per tenant, number of people per tenant. But the question I have, and maybe Mr. Bell or Mr. Bullios can answer this, when you're developing a project with multiple tenants, do you know who those tenants are ahead of time? So how could, you know, you...
Rebate.
You know, well, then that would, if it's, I guess it would be qualified under the rebate thing. But up front, you wouldn't have any idea.
Mr. Bell, do you want to come forward and maybe kind of help the council struggle with this issue?
Well, I think Kathy's on the right track. I mean, I think you don't want to limit to just 20 employees. I think the idea of what you called it, the project, you don't like the, what was it? You call
strip malls.
But you have a number for each individual business would actually help that a lot. If you went to 25, say any one business over 25 or 30 employees, would that be something that would be? I mean, I think that would be because it is difficult.
The numbers up in the air.
I think that we say 25. I forget at council committee there was another 25 that they were paying off of. We would also, what it sounds like we're hearing from council is to err on the side of the applicant a little bit more. So we're not going to get to perfection. We're not going to have a number that resolves everything. 25, and you know what? You meet in 2 weeks, and you can change it.
Exactly.
Thinking is just changing it instead of leave it at 20, but make it 20 per tenant, type of thing. So if you have multiple tenants, if you have 10 possibility of 10 tenants, and that's 20, per thing, instead of trying to say, well, gee, that strip, that project could have 35 people or that, because you don't really know what's going to go in those vacant spaces.
25? Just a thought. I mean, just because
there's amendment floating in there somewhere.
Because a restaurant, a good restaurant's going to have a minimum of 25 employees.
I'll make it a motion, an amendment to the small business that we set it at 25 persons per tenant.
So change the text 20 people to 25 persons
20
per tenant?
25 per tenant.
City clerk.
In a multi.
All right, just one second.
The city clerk's unhappy.
City clerk?
The language already says, for the purposes of this incentive program, means a business once developed employing 20 persons or less. So I would say the language is already there. Mm-hmm. All you need to change is the number. The language is already there. That's per business.
In the ordinance itself?
Mm-hmm. On the fee
it
schedule.
Is right now.
It's on the Exhibit A.
Exhibit A, page 40.
So and I think Councilor
Note 1.
Councilor
Goodrich
okay.
is on that same angle. So you would be agreeable to an amendment that just basically changed from 20 to
25.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you agreeing?
Yes.
I think he's going in the same direction. Okay. Next hand up.
We need a second.
Oh, yes, second. Okay.
Second.
Need a second so we can discuss his amendment?
I'll second.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler, then Zimmerman.
I thought I heard Yori earlier in the discussion that it's one big project and not the pieces. I want to make sure that I heard that correctly, which would make that a little bit...
You did hear that correctly, and this... November 19th, 2012, first time I've ever misspoken.
So, state it correctly then.
Stated correctly is, as proposed, it would be 25 persons per business.
Okay. And then, as I recall in committee, this is a tool given the state allows for, quote unquote, small businesses, as I recall, but doesn't, we don't have to define what small business, the state does not define what small business is.
The state does define, but small business. The state designation is, what, 300 employees. In
okay, that's what I thought I heard. So I to make this clean and simple, why don't we just use the highest number that the state would go along with?
Well, I think that it's two different
since it's
definitions.
A two-year project here.
Their small business is one thing. Maybe the federal government has a different definition.
It's not a state law definition mm-hmm. for the size of a business. That's just a standard that some do. The only law that I can think of specifically at the state or national level that defines small business employees is Obamacare at 25.
And so we can't anticipate what could come in. I like what Kathy's doing. I like it, but I'd say whatever that number, that highest number we could do, just so we can walk away from it and let it happen.
We have a motion to second for 25.
Before I can vote in his motion, which I would support if that's what we got. Is there a higher number that we could do and not risk the whole thing falling apart?
There are very few businesses in Ferndale, maybe the school district, employs more than, what, the 300.
But
so
I don't want to anticipate what could show up, what might see, well, that's a nice piece of property by the river or something, and do something. I don't want to limit that.
I would think, and I might be wrong, that if a business was coming in with 300 people right now, that this might not stop them if we had it or if we didn't have it.
I think Cabela's would come.
I think that with this, based on 25 persons or less, what the state allows us to do is to charge administrative fees to recoup the staff time. They allow us to charge it. They also allow us not to charge it. I think that what is being proposed is focusing on a sector that is small business for Ferndale, not necessarily small business for the state, and that sounds like it's between 20 and 25 people.
I could see a restaurant having 30, 35, 40 people. That's why I keep thinking of things that could be passed at 25.
And if it's a restaurant in the downtown core and vacant land, they don't even need to pay this. Who cares how many are on there?
That's true.
Okay, you have a motion and a second before the amendment is at going from 20 to 25. That's your discussion at this present time. Councilperson Zimmerman.
Well, I think we all have good intentions, but in reality, I think we're going the wrong direction. We don't want to give them a threshold of more employees, which makes it harder for them. We want to say less employees. So I think what you're trying to accomplish is if you built a building and had a business and it had 10 employees, then you qualify, not 35.
It was still fine.
It's 20
or less.
So you're just going
It's 25 or less.
Up or less. Okay.
Just not 26.
That's right.
Councilperson Inger and then Watson.
Go higher. Just to throw this out, because I did it one time. If you go to a bank and apply for a small business loan, the
the financial institution's version of a small business is 150 employees and $4.5 million a year in profit. Mm-hmm. If you don't make that, you're a hobby.
Okay, Councilperson Watson, on the amendment that were before us.
I know. I'm just wondering if we're just chasing our tails at this point. Couldn't we just take that out and just say at the discretion of the community development director? Or no? Ooh. He never makes a mistake. He never makes a mistake except that one time.
Too much power.
Okay.
Move this.
I'm just saying, we're
forward.
Picking 25, how about
you
26?
You have an amendment to go from 20 to 25. You certainly could change this at any time in the future that you
so
want.
So 6 months from now, if it's not working,
you
we could have
change
this
it on the very next meeting.
I don't want to talk about this 2 weeks from now.
15 years. Okay, moving along, folks, you have an amendment before you that you'd vote on to go from 20 to 25. So you're voting on the amendment. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, that motion carries. On the main motion to approve,
adopt. Adopt both.
Yeah, further discussion on the main motion. Or someone could make a motion to approve it.
So moved. I thought it had already been moved.
We already have a motion. Seeing no further discussion. Yeah. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries 7-0. On our second public hearing on the downtown transportation impact fee reduction, this is a public hearing.
Okay, and this one's a little bit different, where there won't be any numbers picked out of the air. The numbers that I'm going to give you are the numbers that you will either vote yay or nay on. So you got that out of your system, right? Okay.
Yes, Mr. Burnett.
All right. So what we've heard is that since everybody lives on top of the hill, folks are already driving by downtown and downtown businesses, and therefore downtown businesses are not generating a lot of new traffic. Therefore, the argument has gone, there should be a reduction in the traffic impact fees paid by downtown as far as the trip calculation. We're just not generating trips, so we shouldn't have to pay for them. That's how the argument's gone. So we looked at that, and we looked at that with our transportation consultant, and I hope you've read the staff report. What the transportation consultant concluded was we are already providing a reduction, sometimes of over 50%, for folks that are on the main line along Main Street, because they are capturing, in some cases, 60% of their overall traffic from folks who are already on the road. They're not generating their own traffic. There are only a few really anchor developments. You have your traditional big box store, which is an excellent anchor development because that's a destination. Hotels, same thing. The best one of all is residential because that is the anchor of all anchors. You go to your house because that's your only house that you go to. So there is already a reduction for development downtown. Listening to council and listening to property owners, we went back to the consultant and said, well, that's really not good enough, that we're looking for a further reduction. So what they were able to do, they then looked at the shopping center. Okay, shopping center, what it does is it averages a whole bunch of uses, and it comes in with an assumption that they also, those uses, share the trips that come into them. What they found, though, was there are some high traffic uses, like a restaurant, that generates a lot of trips, and some others in a shopping center, like an apparel store, that generate very few trips. So when you put it together, the average is more or less in the middle. What we found, though, is while we don't have a lot of restaurants, we do have more restaurants downtown than we have apparel. So the types of developments that we don't have, if we went to the shopping center way of thinking, we would actually increase the fees for the developments that we don't have and reduce the fees for the developments that we do have, which seems counterintuitive as far as where we want to go because we're looking for change. So the shopping center proposal was also rejected. So then we said, all right, are there any reductions that we can have? And it turns out that, yes, there are, because there are shared trips that happen downtown. There are shared trips to the extent that it's about 15% more efficient than a typical suburban shopping area would be, which results in a reduction of 7% in impact fees within the downtown core, which is what we propose, a 7% reduction. Included in there is the fact that it's adjacent to the main line, a subline, I guess, of the WTA bus system. So that encourages more kind of bus ridership and all that. So that's how we get to 7%. We really wanted to get you up to a 10%. So to do that, and this is where we're thinking outside the box, in our downtown zones, both the city center and UR zones, urban residential zones, we require that new developments put in pedestrian-related amenities. It can be anything from a patio to a recessed doorway to picture windows to outdoor seating to having planter boxes along. And the theory behind what we're proposing is that the first development that does it, hopefully in 2012, the first development that does it isn't going to all of a sudden create a pedestrian atmosphere. But if over the next 20 years, if every development that comes in does create a pedestrian amenity, and if the Ferndale Downtown Association works with downtown businesses that are already there to create more of a walk-in neighborhood, you end up seeing what happened in Fairhaven, where it started off where it wasn't an area that you wanted to go to. But slowly, this development happened. It made it attractive there. And then the next development also created something that was friendly to pedestrians. And now you feel very comfortable parking in one part of Fairhaven and walking to another part and not getting back into your car, even though you make several trips to several different stores. And that, I believe, is what the ultimate objective is for the downtown core, to make it that walkable area. And it has the bones for it. It's got a good grid system, and it's also relatively flat. So what we're proposing to do is development that comes in that complies with our pedestrian-friendly elements, that we be able to provide an additional 3%, getting us up to 10% in traffic impact fee reductions for things that they already need to do. In some circumstances, we could even potentially go to council if there is a very dramatic shift or if they put residential on top of commercial, where that might increase it even more. But we're proposing, all told, with an affirmative vote, would be a 10% reduction available to development downtown in both the urban residential and city center zone. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Public hearing, technical questions of staff. Councilperson Olson?
I mentioned this in committee. I'm going to mention it again. We paid Transpo all this money to give us these figures. Why didn't they give us these figures the first time? Did we give them something new that they got to consider? And if so, then why didn't they consider that to begin with?
We initially told them to model anticipated development and didn't tell them to push as far into downtown to squeeze every last potential trip out of it.
Okay. I think that's like the Reader's Digest version. you realize I've been used to being lied to in languages I don't even understand.
We didn't ask them to further reduce downtown to the extent that council is now.
Okay.
The clerk is trying to help you out with a better answer.
I think part of it is that this is so specific that you're now getting into the philosophical aspects of whether or not you want to make a reduction. So that would be wise, because we basically did not direct them to do this at a philosophical level.
That's true.
Okay. Yeah. I understand that.
Thanks, Sam.
You open. Councilperson Wetzer?
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't my original comment, but I just recall Transpo's main thing was the gateway area.
Big on it.
I just want to be reminded, we already have a lowered traffic impact fee, and I think it's $2,300 or $2,700. Remember,
$2,300.
And then outside of the area is $31, $33. It's a long time ago.
Residential.
It's over $3.
Like down at Slater, it's $27, and in the planned action, I think it's $24.
$34.
$34.
Yeah.
And then
we don't have a different one at Slater, do we?
Well, Slater being the rest of the city.
Okay, so we have the the Gateway
plant,
area.
The plant, right.
Which is about 30.
I think it was, what, 34? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we have the rest of the city.
The rest of the city.
Which is 31-ish, 32?
I think it's
27. And then you have downtown, which is 23.
I'm still learning to go through our municipal code. I thought we had two numbers that were 30-something and then 30-something and then the 23. So, but the point is the same, that it's lower already.
That is true. That is true. And similar to what the clerk said, we have asked Transpo now, what is the most reduction that we can defend? And I think that we're there.
And we've got to that spot.
Legally defensible.
Unless we do the whole city like Blaine did and experimented with.
And we see where Blaine is.
Yeah.
Okay, any more questions of staff? No, we'll go to the public hearing portion at 7:16:22. I'm opening the public hearing. And anyone from the audience would like to come forward and speak? You're all just really looking back, excited that you want to talk. Okay, so I'll close the public hearing at 7:16:37. Council, direction. Councilperson Mutcher, first hand up.
Well, I'm looking at the number here. I can't find the page, but I think I can still pull this off. I'd like to make a motion that the city adopts the proposed staff proposal for reduction of fees in the downtown area, the 7%, 3%, and I think you know what we're talking about there. So that's my motion.
Second. Okay. Motion is second by Councilperson Hansen. Further discussion? Councilperson Olson.
Like John pointed out earlier, we've already discounted that. We're in bad enough shape with our fees. I just don't think we can't keep giving stuff away, and I'm not going to support it.
Councilperson Watson and then Goodrich.
I apologize. Does this have a sunset clause also?
No, because this is based on the verifiable data where we could model it. So this
so the facts won't change? I'm just kidding.
It doesn't have a sunset
every
date.
Every action by the council can have a sunset clause.
Yes.
As I quoted before, you can give it and take it away.
Mm-hmm. It's harder to take it away once we give it.
Well, it's, you know, still, you control.
Okay.
That's why you.
But we could put a sunset clause if we wanted to try it and see if it, we got any goodies out of it or not.
You could. Mm-hmm. Correct. Councilperson Goodrich?
In regards to what Councilmember Olson kind of said, I support this in some respect because we've already spent a lot of money improving Main Street in the downtown area. If some of the vacant lot area developed, the developer is going to be putting in the sidewalks and doing the development of things that aren't there themselves. So I can see the justification for a lower fee in the downtown area. If we were looking at it from saying, well, gee, we're going to have to do, as a city, do a lot of improvements, then there may be a case for that. But the roads are pretty much already in. There's just, you know, some additional stuff that the developer is going to be doing.
Doesn't that actually save them money if the roads are already in?
Yeah, but we're charging traffic impact fees to offset costs that the city would have to incur, such as roundabouts in the planned action area. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why their fees are so much higher.
Yeah.
You know, versus the downtown where stuff's pretty much done.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
I support this because I see it going hand-in-hand with what we just passed before the ordinance. And as a downtown business owner for 10 years, I see this benefiting existing businesses as well as business that will be coming down, because the more you, more group activities you got going on, the more business, more activities, everyone does better.
Councilperson Watson?
I'd like to move to amend it to add a sunset clause for December 31st, 2014.
A second for that?
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second on amendment. Further discussion on the amendment?
I could live with it.
Councilperson Ingram and then Councilperson Mutchler.
Well, do we really need a sunset clause on this? If this is verifiable modeling, that you meet these parameters, you're good to go, why would we really need a sunset clause? Because we could basically end it any time we choose to.
And
well, a sunset clause gives you a definite date.
Well, I know what a sunset clause is, but I don't know that we necessarily need it give in this particular.
Send it, hurry up.
Just
go on.
It's a tickler file. Fisher cut bait clause?
There you
yes.
go.
There you go.
Fisher cut bait.
Councilperson Wexler?
Yeah, my objection to a sunset on this type of measure is that 2 years is not very long. I mean, somebody buys a piece of property, thinks about buying a piece of property. No, no, no. I mean, it takes a long time to pull something off. It's just not a very long period of time. So I can't support the amendment.
I will speak for that is in the fact that by the time you publicize this and people know, planning a project does take a long time. And I think this is a wise move by council, is that you improve your brand of trying to emphasize that Ferndale is a business-friendly community. So.
Absolutely.
Councilperson Watson?
We did have a sunset clause in the previous ordinance we just approved, though, did we not?
Yep.
2-year sunset clause for basically the same thing, incentives mm-hmm. to build. So.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
I should have a disclosure here because I didn't anticipate this, but I would be open with all these wonderful things that I would participate and take advantage of these. So as a council person, I would vote for it either way, but I may...
You can accuse yourself now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What, how should I go with that?
Okay, further discussion on the amendment before you propose. So the amendment is the what we would call the sunset clause amendment. All in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, it appears the amendment has failed.
I think it failed, 4-3.
It failed.
Okay, roll call vote so you feel better.
Yep, thank you. Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
No.
Excuse me?
No.
No, what am I voting on?
A roll call vote to verify your vote.
A sunset.
He doesn't believe
you're voting
failed.
If you want a sunset clause or not have a sunset clause.
No sunset clause.
So
no.
Voting no would be no sunset clause. Yeah. Sunset clause.
Councilmember Wilson?
I voted the last
one. Yes.
Councilmember Ingram?
No.
Councilmember Mutzler?
No sunset.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Yes.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Nope.
Fails.
Fails. Now, on the main motion, any further discussion on the main motion? Seeing none, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Oppose.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries 6-1.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Yori.
Thank you, Yori.
Okay, next up, I think we're going to move quickly through these, but we shall see.
Sure.
Next item, the ordinance on the solid waste utility tax.
No.
Don't all leave. We're having more fun.
They got their incentives around.
Go home and do your homework.
Put the board of gas tax on.
They all have gas.
Wrong crowd.
Okay.
Back
to order here, children. Okay,
sorry,
Finance Director.
Briefly, Council, tab F of your packet deals with the solid waste utility tax. I believe Council asked us to come up with two different graphs. One, and the thought process earlier was to help fund a police officer. At this point in the general fund, with the property tax increase and getting the final department inputs on expenditures, we, as you recall earlier, we have a small surplus plan for 2013 in the general fund, including one new police officer in March. This might be a quick one then for you on both the solid waste tax increase and the water, sewer, storm utility tax increase, tabs F and G.
Councilperson Olson, then Mutzler.
So, Mark, you're saying we've already got that position covered without doing these?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilperson Mutzler.
Thank you for preparing this. I make a motion that we do not raise either solid waste or water, sewer, stormwater.
Second.
Can we do that?
The motion is out of order.
Yeah.
You cannot make a motion not to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. So the motion before you is a yes or no. On the motion.
That would make everybody. I knew it was
going to
happen.
Not when everyone pays attention to you.
I was reading his 50 pages of.
Will you rescue us from this abyss?
We don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do anything. If you
do anything,
if you just don't do anything,
it dies. You can die for lack of emotion.
Yes.
There you go.
Nobody any emotions.
I'm moving up.
No, don't tell me.
For you doing nothing. So is there
the way you would kill this, if you really wanted to formalize it, is to move to pass.
And then vote no.
It's simpler the other way.
Yeah, just let it die.
Okay. It appears there is no motion on the floor, so we will move forward to the next agenda item.
Excellent.
Well, yeah, the next agenda would be the utility tax thing.
You are correct. That would be the same action. You could do the same lack of action to move forward. I'm seeing no activity moving forward, nobody doing anything, so that motion dies. The next one, the water sewer stormwater utility tax.
No, we're done. Next item, Mayor's reports and comments. We're done doing nothing.
So, to Mayor's report. It's official now. I have an official letter from the owners of Tenasca, the cogeneration plant, and he'd like me to inform you that the sale has gone through and the Tenasca Ferndale cogeneration plant has been sold to Puget Sound Energy. He didn't give the price, but I'm sure it's a profit. They have been in operation since 1994. They achieved a significant milestone in September 2011 when the debt on the plant was paid off in full. Now the time to sell it. The facility, they don't plan any management change. The facility currently provides 21 well-paid permanent positions and generates an annual payroll, including some subcontractor service and vendors, of more than $3.7 million. The plant is one of the county's largest property taxpayers. It certainly is mixed feelings that we bring to close this 18-year partnership with those of you in Whatcom County community. We greatly enjoyed being a contributing member of the community. We are delighted that Ferndale will continue providing electricity, jobs, and revenue to the area. On a personal thing, because I emailed him before, Mr. Jensen, we continue to explore the research into clean coal technology. And this gentleman and I have had lots of discussions about that.
It's an oxymoron, just so you know.
And he disagrees with people who do not believe it can be clean coal technology.
Facts are well-known liberal bias.
You know, the one thing I have to say about Tenasca, they are one of the most, or were, and may hopefully they'll continue it, but one of the most amazing industrial organizations that I've ever seen. Because of their safety record.
Safety. Yep.
This unbelievable. I have never heard of an organization with that much hazardous stuff flying around everywhere. 34 years now this year without a lost time accident. That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, the intent in Puget keeps the exact same staff. The management switches over from Puget Sound, but basically same staff other than the plant manager. So
Tim Miller?
Not a really effect to...
Yeah, he'll be there.
Yeah, so good thing for Ferndale. Yeah. Okay, the other mayor report is it's my honor to announce to you that thanks to our new police facility, lots of people want to come see it. It's being toured regularly, and the Small Cities Caucus is a nice new place. We're going to show it to all the small cities tomorrow, and they'll tell you about coming, and we're not going to let them shoot any weapons. Okay, we have a opening on the Planning Commission you've heard about before. We have an applicant. We'll bring you to the committee on the next committee meeting. We're probably going to have two openings for the Planning Commission, so be on the lookout. We need an additional Planning Commission member or more to do. So we'll have one a applicant for you on the next committee. If you know of anyone, we're looking for a second person. So coming up rapidly. Okay, that's it for mayor reports. Council reports. Councilperson Goodrich.
Two things. One is I'm proud to announce that the Linotype machine in the print shop at the Heritage Society has been repaired and will be operational for old-fashioned Christmas. It's been a year and a half since that thing has been working. For the students, if you want to see how things were printed before your computers, that you've all grown up with.
Come to
old-fashioned Christmas, and you'll see how things were done before computers. I even have a little picture there of 100 years of, has a Linotype machine, and it has an iPad, and it says 100-year difference, and where we've come from.
About 100 years old. So.
our linotype machine is 98 years old, and he said it's one of the finest machines he's seen that's still in operation. And this guy travels through the whole United States repairing linotype machines. So that's something kind of proud of their heritage site. The other thing is I want to bring the attention of folks again. November 29th from 3 to 7 is the Ferndale scoping meeting for the Gateway Pacific project at the Ferndale Event Center. And there's a group of people that want the scope of the project to go from the plant where they dig up the coal to where it comes through here, that should be a part of the whole EIS process, looking at the whole thing. And they're not talking about anything about economic sides of it. So they're looking for people to come to the meeting, to ask them to keep the scope small just to our area, and also to look at the economic benefits that a project that size can bring to our community.
Do they want written comments? It's 3 to 7, right?
Yeah, they also take written comments, but they get 2 minutes.
Comments up until January.
But you can do that online.
Yeah,
but you can do that online, right?
But they'd like some oral things there to some people that are in support of the project to counteract all the anti-coal people.
Or those who aren't.
that come. So
these are the counselors. Put your name.
Yeah.
Those are the two things I have.
I'll allow comment by you because you were responding to this.
Also, for those in the audience, the purpose of the scoping is not to say whether or not you're for or against. You can say that, but to say this is what we want studied about this proposal. Yeah. That's how to make the most valuable comment. What do you want studied in this study?
Very good. Thank you. Councilperson Hansen, Ingram, and then Zimmerman.
A couple of events that are coming up. Traditionally, the hanging of the lights occurs on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So, after 8 o'clock in the morning is when we start.
Rain or shine.
It
better be because it's always raining.
Yeah.
No
shiny. The Christmas lights were repaired last Saturday. We had a good crew to do that, and then the following weekend, prior to the opening or at about the opening of the old-fashioned Christmas, is the tree lighting ceremony, which 5 or 5:30. Well, they changed it. When does Santa arrive? That's
Santa
the important.
5:30.
Oh, there you go. So yeah, I think you're right. I think they start serving hot chocolate.
When the tree arrives, or is Paul going to handle that?
I have no idea.
All right, pressure's on Councilperson Ingram.
Paul Bunyan. Go for it.
Tree arrives Monday.
Monday?
Monday the 26th. It will be cut down sometime mid-AM, delivered to the Riverwalk, set in place and bolted down. The lift will be delivered mid-morning on the 26th. I am looking for a couple of young, strapping good lads that would like to come down and join me at the fountain on the Riverwalk on the 27th and the 28th, possibly. It may only be the 27th if I get some help.
What time on the 27th?
About 8 o'clock in the morning.
Hang lights.
To hang the lights on the tree.
Could you push it back to noon? I might convince them.
They're in school.
You need to
I thought they were out of school for Christmas break.
They'll be waking up by then.
No, it's not Thanksgiving, isn't it?
Yeah. You can't encourage.
Okay, what time do you want? Noon?
Well, no, they don't get out of school.
They can.
If you do it right. I'm going to stay out of this.
All right. Anyway, I will be there. Let's put it this way. I will be there at 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning. If anybody wants to come and join me, I will be happy to have the help.
You're going to have donuts and hot chocolate.
No, I'm not.
You can watch him hang.
Not unless the mayor delivers it in person. Because I'm older than him, and that's pretty old. No. And so I'm getting too old to climb up in that basket by myself and just do all this stuff. So anyway, if anybody wants to come down and help, Tuesday the 27th, possibly Wednesday the 28th, I will test the system on the 29th, and we'll be ready for tree lighting on the 30th. At 5:30 or thereabouts, and I think Pete Hartschel Senior is going to do the plunger.
Okay.
So, and by the way, the Sister City guys came up, and maybe the chief can
give us a description of their tour of the new police facility.
Ah, we'll make them do that on the police report. Okay, Councilor Zimmerman, you had a council report?
Yeah, just, you know, as we know, we've spent money other places, and we will not have any extra goodies for the parks and recreation. However, I think you all got the email from Senator Doug Erickson, and it certainly sounds like he's excited about working with our group, and he's got some money that he's kind of got earmarked, but I mean trails and opening of public lands and then money for projects. And to ring his bell a little bit, the fields, the lights and all the stuff that went down there, he was part of that group from the state level that brought that money to Ferndale. So I'm very, very excited that he is thinking along these lines of on a state level for money.
Great.
Oh, there's one other thing I could point out. I don't get to do this very often, and you'll probably never see it ever again in the history of Ferndale, but there's a gentleman in the very, very back sitting next to the chief of police. It's Maxwell. Could you stand up for a second and just wave to everybody? There he goes. This is not his cup of tea, but he made it once just because I told him he might get extra credit.
He didn't get up to speak.
Oh, we forgot about that. There's something fun.
If he sings, he gets extra credit. Okay, any other council reports? Moving on. So, staff reports, great news from the Public Works Department.
We submitted three applications to the State Transportation Improvement Board for their pavement preservation program. And the projects were off of our TBD list, and one project was selected for funding, Vista Drive, from 2nd to the roundabout. And so we will be getting about $520,000, and that we will be matching then with the sales tax revenue of need about $90,000. So it's just having that money available, we're really able to put those dollars to work.
So we have not gotten that fund if we didn't have our own.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So having that money 2nd to the roundabout. So we're not talking total reconstruct. We'll be doing some dig outs, and we'll end up with an overlay and replace some of the sections of the sidewalk. Upgrading the ADA ramps. And so the work we do there will extend the life of that roadway, out like 15 years or so. Yeah, so we're very excited about putting the TBD dollars to work. So we should have two completed projects by the end of 2013. Fortin and Vista.
Good job.
Yeah, we're very excited about it.
Outstanding presentation by Katie and Janice.
In the
name.
I have no doubt.
No. What's the status on Main Street?
We're looking at weather suspension for the final lift of the pavement. So everything else would be completed except that final lift.
They're going to keep putting this concrete down for the sidewalk?
Yeah, they have a section.
It's only those little chunks.
They've got three little chunks left.
Yeah, and they'll complete that. And so they have just a couple items, and it's all weather dependent. It's just today it was raining so far.
They actually worked today.
They were out throwing dirt.
Yeah, they put the rails on the
sidewalk.
To lay it, yeah.
So to complete that, and so we'll just be waiting on the final list.
Okay.
And then the street lights is separate contract, and landscaping is separate contract.
Good job. Thank you. Way to go. City clerk.
Nothing. You there.
Community development director.
Nope.
City administration.
Nothing.
Finance.
Nothing.
Police.
Anyone?
You have to stand up and tell us about the sister city.
The two representatives from our sister city, Minobosco, Japan, they were enthralled by the facility. And I suspect, I couldn't understand if they said in Japanese to their interpreter, the building does not appear to be too large. It seems to be a wise use of public funds.
And it was in a foreign language.
What's Japanese for palatial?
Okay. No, you can't speak anymore.
Yeah, no, I have a question for Janet.
Yes?
Maybe Greg. It may be just part of the construction along various spots around the city, but I noticed in my travels that all of our signs about prohibiting unmuffled compression brakes have disappeared.
We love unmuffled compression brakes. I have no idea.
No.
I have no idea.
I just
noticed the one on Church is gone. The one on Main Street coming eastbound is gone. The one down south on Ferndale Road here, they're gone. They're all gone.
Somebody with compression brakes is collecting them.
Go ahead.
Yes. Councilperson Olson?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor, say my thing aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. High school.